Oops, it's a swing.
Hey, now.
We'll go ahead and call this Campo meeting to order. Can I get roll call, please? Thank you.
Chairperson Kimbrough?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Steadfield?
Here.
Member Backer? Here. Member Bonkowski?
Here.
Member Erb?
Here.
Member Kelly?
Here.
Member Macquarie?
Here.
Ex officio Member Rosenberg?
Here.
Quorum is present?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Number two, is there any agenda changes? I have none.
No, Mr. Chair. No,
thank you. Disclosures. Is there any disclosures tonight on any item on the agenda? Seeing none, we won't have to deal with that. And then we'll move to public comment. This is a chance for any members of the public who would like to come forward. At this point, we'd ask that it not be on the agenda, but if it is, that's okay. If not, I'll bring it back here for looking at the minutes from our July 10th meeting. Do I have any comments or a motion?
I move to approve the minutes of Campo for July 10th, 2019, as presented.
I have a motion. I have second. A second. Second, all right. Any other discussion? Seeing none, call for the question. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimous. Let's move to the public meeting item 6A for possible action. Discussion and possible action regarding a formal amendment to Campo's federal fiscal year 2018-2021 Transportation Improvement Program. Derek.
Thank you, Chair.
Not Derek.
So
This item is on the TIP, which is the Transportation Improvement Program document. What this document does is it programs federal funds, as well as projects of regional significance. For the most case, in this amendment, all four projects are being amended based on new information that we've recently got on the 90% design plans. To make sure that NDOT is able to, and the feds are able to issue a notice to proceed, the TIP and the project amount must be in line with the estimate to allow the notice to proceed to be issued. The foreground amendment is publicly noticed. For this particular document, there's a 30-day public notice. That's a requirement of CAMPO's public participation plan. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to summarize the four projects that this amendment is impacting. So the first project is for the I-580 multi-use path to Colorado Street, and this is on packet page number 35. It is an existing project, and this amendment is adding about $275,000. For the most part, this is for adding the $261,000 in STBG funds that was allocated to the project by the RTC recently. However, this week, NDOT did reach out to us, and after they had a chance to review the 90% design plans, they thought it was appropriate to provide additional TAP funding. So this is this replaces the $261,000 in STBG funds, which is CAMPO's set aside with state TAP funding. And so we want to thank NDOT for that. But what that will do is that also releases Carson City STBG funds, and we can allocate that to a different project. Based on that comment, I do want to note something. As the TIP document, as it was presented, has the funding source for this project as STBG funds, so I'll need to change that as part of the motion. The second project is for Fairview Drive reconstruction project, and this is on packet page number 37. Back in April 10th, the RTC approved the allocation of STBG funds that were released or freed up with the completion of the Silver Sage project. So we're adding about $88,000 in funding to that project. Moving on to the third project, this is the South Carson Street Complete Streets project, and this is on packet page number 40. We're adding about $882,000 in local funds that were not previously displayed in the project budget. The purpose for this is to make sure that the numbers in the TIP align with the tire agreement that the city will be signing in the fall. So lastly, the last project is the Airport Road Sewer and Road Project, which is on packet page number 41. Again, this is an existing project, and this is adding about $474,000 in funding. This includes $19,000 in STBG funds that was allocated to the project by the RTC, and then about $454,000 in utility funds that have been allocated to the project by the city. So that concludes my comments on the TIP amendment, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Can you let me know, we're going to replace the 261 with 725 with what kind of funding?
So this is a surface transportation block grant funding, and it might get confusing because there's a number of surface STBG funds out there. The funds that got set aside to CAMPO are defined by the feds as STBG for urban areas between 5 and 200,000. NDOT's replacing those with STBG TAP funding, which is funding that
TAP TAP.
TAP, yep, okay, Transportation you. Alternative Program funds. Thank you.
I'm not used to that one. Sandra?
And I apologize, I should probably know this, but I see you initially adopted this TIP in August of 2017. What is your update schedule and plan on updating a new TIP?
I think some of the right now the TIP expires in 2021, and so some of the thought that we've had from the staff level is as we start moving forward on a new regional transportation plan is to really look at what kind of projects are needed for the region and deal with it at that time.
So in line with the RTP, when you update the RTP, you'll be updating that. Okay.
Correct.
And just for the reason I'm asking that is we have our annual work program going to our board. We typically bring that with the STIP in the fall. We're not bringing the STIP this year because there are various amendments occurring with all of the MPOs, and it doesn't make sense for us to bring a STIP to our board that doesn't include the various updates to the TIP. So we plan on similarly updating our statewide transportation improvement program sometime next year as all these updates occur from the MPOs.
Any other questions? You know, if you see it that way? I always get confused. We keep voting for the same projects over and over and over again because we keep changing the funds, but that's how you get the job done better than what it was originally proposed to be. So just not used to approving the same project like five times as each amendment comes forward.
Are you sure? Are you really sure?
Yeah, that's right.
We applaud Campo's transparency and the changes to what the prior TIP approvals were.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Laura. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission for approval or denial. Yes.
I move to approve the formal amendment as presented with the correcting on project CC2017002 to change the STBG 5K to 200K funding to STBG TAP.
It was good that you wrote that down, because you got a second. Was that a second, Brad? Okay, thanks. Any other discussion? Seeing none, call for the question. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries unanimous. 6B, discussion of possible action regarding proposed amendments to Campo's public participation plan. Lucia?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. Campo's public participation plan was last amended in 2012. Since then, as you know, the tools and methods for public engagement have evolved, and so it was time for staff to take a look and make updates accordingly. As described in the staff report, a public participation plan work group was convened in April. Representatives from NDOT, RTC Washoe, Washoe Tribe, the Nevada Appeal, Carson City Information Technology Department, Carson City Public Works, Campo, Douglas County, and Lyon County were all invited. An official 45-day public comment period was open from June 5th through July 22nd, meeting the current requirements in the adopted public participation plan. No public comments were received. I will say that the workroom meeting and conversation was really informative, and even though we didn't incorporate all of the suggestions that were discussed during that meeting into the amendments, there was a lot of learning opportunity for our staff to learn from the other agencies and jurisdictions that participated and how they engage the public, when and how they do, you know, translated materials, how they do accessibility for ensuring the public is free to, and able to attend all of your meetings and events, how the public is engaged with online tools, the presence of live video applications, and different things like that. It was a really good discussion. So I'll briefly walk you through the amendments that staff are proposing, and then I'm happy to answer any questions or discuss further with you. Starting on packet page 54, the edits to the description of the current federal regulations just brings our plan up to date with what exists today. If you go to packet page 56, this adds the 3-day written notice requirement that's in the Nevada revised statutes and just reaffirms our commitment to that. Also at the bottom, it reaffirms our commitment to make reasonable accommodation to all members of the public for our meeting. If you go to packet page 57, you'll see that the last time this document was updated, the locations of where we post our materials has changed substantially. So you'll see a lot of red line on that section. We also determined that there's no legal requirement to post public notices in the legal section of the newspaper, and that was through discussion with RTC Washoe and NDOT and others. And so, you know, in talking with stakeholders and internally as well, we felt that we're able to reach more individuals who are more likely to see the regular section of the newspaper and not necessarily be combing through the legal section. So you'll see that update in two instances in these amendments. If you go to packet page number 58, We have updated to provide the Campo email address, as well as Carson City Connect, the virtual City Hall web application that any Campo resident or visitor could comment on. It's just another outreach opportunity for folks. We do reaffirm our commitment to engage with partner agencies and jurisdictions in that third bullet there on packet page 58, as well as to coordinate and provide our materials both to Federal Highways as well as to Federal Transit Administration. Down at the bottom, there's some changes to the TIP. You'll see that we made some clarification. We combined two bullets to make it clear on when a formal amendment would be triggered. And moving on to packet page 59, you'll see at the very bottom the updates regarding the legal section. So there it's really clearly spelled out what we'll do and how we'll post that information within the Nevada appeal. There are occasions where we post additional notifications, sometimes to Carson Now or other publications. And I will say when we do post in the Nevada appeal, we tend to post on Saturdays. So our posts are picked up by the Record Courier and distributed to Lyon and Douglas County as well. That takes care of the substantive amendments, and so with that, I'll close this up and happy to answer any questions or have any discussion you might have. Thank you.
Questions?
On page 58 of the packet, in bullet point 3 at the bottom, when a positive cost estimate change representing either less than $5 million or less than 20% of the total project cost, that would trigger an administrative modification. I think our current policy is 10%. Is that correct?
It's on the contract signatures, the change that comes back to this board.
Right.
It comes back to the board if it's 10% and you change a contract.
It's more than 10%.
Right.
This is more, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lucia, but this language is more specific to the TIP versus some of the LPA agreements or the contract documents that RTC signs where we've utilized that 10%.
Let me rephrase the question. What's the thought process behind going to 20% as opposed to 10%? For administrative versus coming back to the board?
The 20% is not actually a change. It was already in there on packet page 59. You see it on the top of the next page. That's a threshold in federal regulation, that 20%. It just has to do with the processes for updating the TIP. So that it overlays with our 10%, but it's a little bit different.
So I'd like to talk about, since I saw that we're going to move the eighth of a page to the regular section of the paper, which I do think will broaden the scope of that, but in keeping with the last action item that we took and how many times we keep having to reapprove projects, I'd like for us to consider, because unless I'm wrong and you can tell me, it's fine, when you look on page 58 in the packets or 6 of 10 of the document, is the 30-day public review period, is that because it's in our TIP? So could we change that to 14 so that we could move these projects faster and get them done? Because I think what I'm also seeing is just what you said. We're constantly seeing a project again where I'd like to see us get the work done instead of delaying. So can we is it permissible? It's not a federal rule?
I appreciate you asking that question. Different organizations, even in the region, do different. I know up in Tahoe, they do only a 7-day public comment period for their TIP, which is probably too short for us. But there have been instances where we do require a 30-day public comment, and just because of timing, it ends up, you know, we miss two whole board meetings, and it's, you know, for an action, it'll delay the project up to 3 months just to get that board action to do it. And so I'm not aware of any requirement that it must be 30 days, and I think we could put that probably in the motion if that's something that the board wanted to do.
And then the next, after that, with the exception of the plan, which will be given a minimum of 45 days, again, can that be 30? Yes. So I'm just trying, so if we're going to change the plan itself, 30 days for the public, but if we just want to fix a project because we're going to, thank you for the money after all, but if we're just going to change the money sources and things, I'd like to get the projects going, so I think I'd like to consider changing it to 14 days for the modification and then 30 days on public participation plan, just so that we talk that out and see if it'll help us get these projects moving quicker. Thank you. Oh, and then I had one other, and I don't know if it's just a grammar thing, but if you look to the bottom of page 6, where we were lining out one, it's the other half of the new one or whatever, when a project is moved, 1 year of the TIP to another, should we keep the from? Shouldn't it be from 1 year of the TIP to another year of the TIP, either forward or back?
That's a great comment, Supervisor. Yes.
Sorry.
That should be saved.
I'm wordsmithing, but
that from should be saved.
The from.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments? Seeing none, I'll take it out to the public. Anybody from the public have comments to this item? Nobody coming forward, so we have some changes that are proposed. Is there a motion or any more discussion on those changes that have been proposed?
I'll do it then. Make a motion?
Sure.
Okay. I move to approve the amendments as presented with a change everywhere in the document, because I think there's a few places that talk about it, that have the minimum 30-day public review be changed to 14, and on the exception of the public participation plan be given a minimum of 30 days, and correct the from on page 6, item 1.
Is that clear enough for a second?
Well, they took out the 2, so it's 1. Yeah. Yes.
Are we clear on that?
I'll second.
Jasmine, second. Any more discussion? Seeing none, call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
No, I read every single word.
That's good. Item 6C for information only. Regarding fiscal year 2019 CAMPO activities. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. I started doing these annual reports last year, and I found that over the course of the year, I was referring back to them several times when I got public comment. So we have it here again tonight. This is just an informational summary of fiscal year 19 CAMPO activities. As you may know, CAMPO staff prepares and provides quarterly reimbursement requests to the Nevada Department of Transportation, and that's where we receive our CAMPO planning funding. Alongside those reimbursement requests is quarterly reports, and then at the end of each fiscal year, we supplement the quarterly report with an annual summary. So that's attached as an exhibit to the staff report. The annual report for fiscal year 19 starts on packet page 67 for you. Overall, we did well with the remaining budget, within our budget for all of our tasks. The rule of thumb is that it's generally okay to go over a task budget by up to 10% as long as there's funding within the major work element to support that overage. You'll notice we did go over budget within task 2.1, public participation. However, 6.8% is covered by the other tasks in work element 2. Additionally, you'll notice we went over in test 3.3 by $186.34. This did represent 33.9% of the task budget, and that was due to overlap in timing of an approved UPWP amendment back in May and the delay in getting that amendment into our financial software. I did talk with NDOT staff, and they assured me that the $186 was not a deal killer, and that funding was covered by other tasks within the work element. Moving forward, Carson City's migration to the Tyler Munis financial accounting software should help alleviate the possibility of this type of thing happening again. The report also documents progress on schedule milestones, and that's on packet page number 68. Uh, On task 3.2, there were multiple milestones that have shifted schedule, and these were primarily due to staffing change in the transit coordinator position. The position has been filled, as you know, and progress has been made on all milestones, with the exception of the Title VI document, which we learned wasn't actually due until the winter of 2019-2020. So we're on track to get to that as well. Task 3.4, those milestones were delayed primarily due to the staffing change in the transportation planner position, which has since been filled, and progress has been made on all milestones for those tasks. Task 4.4, again, due to staffing changes, there were some delays in scheduled milestones. However, the position has been filled, and progress has been made on those milestones. The milestones in Task 5.3 were delayed due to a staffing change of the same position. The facility's inventory is approximately 80% completed, and we anticipate that to be complete sometime this year and for sure by next spring. I did include a list of successful accomplishments within the staff report, and it's the same list from packet page number 68. We did have many accomplishments in fiscal year 19 despite staff turnover and some delays. For transit, we successfully completed our triennial review. This is where the FTA comes and they sit for 3 days and comb through every single document you have, from your financial documents to procurement to the cleanliness underneath the toolboxes in the fleet warehouse. They are there in person. We did a really good job. We had a couple of administrative findings, which we reported on, that have all successfully been addressed and corrected. We also developed and adopted our transit asset management plan. This was on schedule. It was completed and adopted by October 1st. Of 2018. We scoped, contracted, and initiated the JAC Transit Development and Coordinated Plan, and with NDOT recognition that we were short on funding for this plan, and it was a really good thing, we partnered with NDOT with state planning funds to supplement our budget, and that project is underway and on schedule to be completed this fall. For non-motorized modes, we finalized the baseline complete streets performance monitoring data. We initiated an amendment to the ADA transition plan, and we continued to coordinate with partner jurisdictions and private developers to implement non-motorized improvements with every development project that comes in region-wide. And for roadways, we administered the STBG grant program. We conducted the Douglas County pavement survey, and we implemented the Carson City pavement management plan. And those are just the highlights. So because the annual report was combined with the fourth quarter report, you will see additional detail in the fourth quarter. I'm not going to go into all those details, but I'm happy to provide any comments and answer any questions you might have. Looking ahead for fiscal year 2020, we do have some really exciting planning work going on, if you get excited like me about planning work. Staff are continuing to focus on asset management, including digitization of all of our bicycle and pedestrian data, our ADA data, including curb ramps and barriers to ADA transition, transit, streets maintenance infrastructure, and all of this will support more informed decision-making. Modal planning ahead of our next RTP update. So over the next 6 to 9 months, you'll see the JAC Transit Development and Coordinated Plan. You'll see school safety review studies, which are on the agenda to be considered for approval by the RTC later this evening. And you'll see the initiation of our Carson Area Transportation System Management Plan, which will look at signals and intelligent transportation systems. So all of that's happening behind the scenes. There's a lot of modal work, and we'll start initiating work on our next RTP. So later this fall and this winter, you'll start to hear about goal setting, vision setting for our next RTP, and it'll be really exciting planning work. So with that, we have a lot going on. We're very busy, and any opportunity for the public or the board to get engaged if you're interested in any of these topics, we will get you involved if you have extra time and would like to help us out. So happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Any questions? Go ahead, Chad.
Lucia, did I hear right that the transportation sector does communicate with or comment on development projects for bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure within those projects and presumably within the overall plans for bicycle and pedestrian structures within the city?
Yes, absolutely. We participate in major project review meetings with Carson City. We communicate with Douglas County and Lyon County to understand and incorporate what's going on in their development projects. And at every opportunity, we provide comment to ensure that projects are building on what we're looking to do as a region for bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure.
Any other questions?
Chaz, I can vouch for that because I've been at those meetings.
Actually, that was going to be one of my questions, is what happened to you with RTC or Kempo? And who has the most authority to make those changes or make that request?
Our staff wear multiple hats, and so where it's appropriate, you know, we wear the hat to ensure that what's going on is meeting the needs of our regional planning documents, and we're also able to wear the hat to make sure what's happening is happening in the best interest of Carson City as well when it comes to a local development project.
Like complete streets?
Carson City does maintain a complete streets policy, so bicycle, pedestrian, transit, it's all considered with every single project.
So it's just, I just find that unique that you can wear both hats in those situations. So does RTC have a formal signature and Campo have a formal signature on the plans?
No. Campo's role is really in the role of a planning capacity. So we really look at it in terms of how things relate to our long-range network goals, whereas the Carson City hat is much more detailed. We're more into the details, if that makes sense.
Well, would you give your comments to the RTC? Then Campo says this and hands it to RTC for them to sign off? Or do you guys sit in the same room and figure this out?
Lucia, if I could. I don't think it's that formal. It's the same bodies. So generally in these meetings, what we're looking at is, as Lucia said, long-range planning. We're looking at infrastructure improvements, traffic counts, all of the details going into the future that we're going to have to deal with because of the impacts of a particular development in addition to accumulated developments in a certain area. So it's not like you have a Campo hat and an RTC hat. The bodies that are there are making general comments about what they see and what they anticipate going into the future, all of which, all these comments incorporated into policy or maybe incorporated into policy going forward if they're valid points.
So if you're sitting somewhere down, since it's a Campo and you're close to Lyon County or close to Douglas County, that I assume there's an opportunity to talk about their issues at the same time then, I guess.
We're crossing lines, but I do, and I have seen here benefits from our staff having those multiple roles and that we have kind of a bigger picture perspective on what's going on. We're aware of projects in Douglas County and Lyon County, and we're talking with NDOT about the bigger regional needs. So because of that, we're able to make, I think, more informed comments on those development projects.
Okay. And then I just have one other question. It looks like you spent all the money this year for 2022. So if this is a 19-20 budget, you spent most of the money in 19, so there isn't a lot of money left in 20. So does that mean you got most of the work done already then? I mean, there's balances left.
That's a good question. So the balances you see here for the quarterly report part of this have to do with the fiscal year 19 budgets.
Ended in July.
So by the end of the calendar year, generally, we'll get an understanding of the carry forward, and all of the carry forward money will move into the 2020 budget. Uh-huh. If you go on the Campo website, and you all have seen it before, the 2020 has its own budget. And so all of this extra that you see in the Q4 is likely to be carried forward.
Okay. That's clear.
That's a great question.
Yeah, all right. The other one wasn't before? No. Does anybody from the public like to come forward on this item? Seeing none, it's informational only. So we move along on the agenda then. For internal communication, 7A future agenda items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as alluded to and discussed at the last several meetings, the JAC Transit Development Coordinated Plan is on schedule. We hope to bring the draft plan to Campo next month for consideration and comments by Campo. Not on the agenda here, but I will say that that plan is being presented to the Lyon County Board tomorrow to get some feedback and comments into that, so we're excited about that. Also, for next month, we will bring forward the transit asset management. The annual targets are due, so we'll bring forward our TAM targets for your approval as well.
Item 8, board comments. For information only. Yes, of course. You want to start? Sam, do you have any comments?
I've got nothing.
Nothing from Denda.
I know.
That's all right, though. Things is going smooth. John, do you have anything? Chaz? Nope.
Nope.
This is way too easy.
Yeah. I guess my comment would be that the NDOT project on East William Street, Highway 50, across from the mobile home park, is working well. I didn't quite understand the project when it was first presented, and now that it's in place and working, I think it's a good location and it's working well.
Thank you. We are, now that you brought that up, we are working on how we communicate our projects. So we're realizing a lot of times we go early when there's just plan sets and stuff, and we're looking for strategies on how we continue to communicate through construction and, you know, what's happening, because sometimes there's a lag between when the last public meeting was and when there's construction and all of those things. So I'm glad to hear positive feedback after the completion of a project, and we'll continue to work on how we communicate those things.
Anything? Nope. Well, the next part is if there anybody from the public like to come forward, any other items? Seeing none, I bring it back here for a motion for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
Lori moves. What time would we like to bring RTC back? 10 after the hour, we'll bring RTC. Thank you.
Yeah. So just minimize it.
Hello, Donna.
Me?
Time? This guy fits in.
Sure. That's not my best skill. I can write, but my problem is I have trouble reading.
Sure. Yes, actually, good writer. Sure, I'd love to.
I can believe it.
Who's going to run it for you? Huh? Who's going to run it for you? They're going to do it themselves. So you put it on their site and they take care of it.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, your little bits of the frame, those pieces of the frame. Well, make sure you do the plan on working on the Chucky Metals. Make sure that you have some connection. Nail down the stuff you've been talking about. So, Chucky Metals. So, if you have anything that outlines that a little bit, make sure you get that piece. I put it in this Chucky Metals card. So, the eighth big plan is obviously.
Yeah, I have to look at where it changed very near.
I'm starting trucking out, so I start reading along as
well. Yeah, we'll have to get together.
So, Sparks and Mount Rose Highway. Because your trail ends with those Sparks, right?
No, it actually goes to Sparks.
Okay, so it starts at the outer end of Sparks, actually starts in Hungry Valley. Spring.
We need to get together and discuss that.
Yeah, I want to make sure it gets in that final.
Yeah.
We don't buy a car to park. That's very true.
Say that again.
Yeah, it's a beautiful one. I like how they did the white.
Ready on the left, ready on the right. I think we're good. All right. I'd like to call this meeting of the Regional Transportation Commission to order. It is August 14th, 2019. It is 5:10 p.m. We're in the community room or the community center in Carson City in the Sierra Room, 851 East William Street. Kathy, can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Monkowski.
Here.
Chairperson Kimbrough.
Here.
Commissioner Badwell. Mr. McCarty?
Yeah.
Mr.
Stedfeld?
Yeah.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Kathy. Agenda management notice. Any changes to the agenda tonight?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any disclosures from any members of the RTC board?
Yes.
Mark?
Yeah, I need to recuse myself on item 6E.
I'll make a note and come back to you on that item. All right. First public comment. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the RTC tonight? If so, you can come up at this time, or you can come up when an agenda item is presented, and we will have a final public comment at the end. Is there any member of the public that wants to come up now? I know that we have people out there that want to present some public comment tonight. So, thank you. We'll move on to agenda item 5 for approval of the minutes. If the members of the commission have had a chance to read those, I will entertain a motion.
Move to approve the minutes for July 10th, 2019.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We're now on the public meeting items. Item 6A for information only. Informational presentation regarding fiscal year 2019 transportation activities. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. I gave a similar presentation at Campo a few minutes ago, and I found that when I did this annual report last year, I ended up circling back to it many times throughout the year. So here we are again for a summary of fiscal year 19 RTC activities. RTC is funded by five full-time employees, including myself, a senior transportation planner, a transit coordinator, a transportation planner analyst, and a bicycle and pedestrian coordinator. And those five employees are primarily responsible for seeking and obtaining funding to support transportation capital projects, as well as implementing those projects and supporting them by planning and helping design and implement them. So I'm going to present a little bit on the grant applications and the capital projects, and then I'll open it up for questions and discussion. Related to grant applications, this year staff developed and submitted four competitive grant applications, totaling $2.8 million. Of the 2.5 and change grant funds requested, we were awarded $2,033,971. And so we leveraged $80,900 to fund $2.1 million in transportation projects. Of the four grants, we were awarded three. The one that we were not awarded is actually still pending. So we're still going for 100%, but we'll know in the next couple months. Not included in this list was the $685,000 that we worked with Nevada Department of Transportation to get, and that local match was covered by state gas tax dollars. And also not included was the $50,000 grant we received to fund our free passes program for the Jack Transit. So those are in addition to this funding. A summary of all of that is contained in Exhibit 1 of the staff report on packet page number 9. I also want to point your attention to Exhibit 2, which displays the fiscal year 19 transportation projects. Every month, as you know, in every single RTC packet, we provide an update on all of the transportation projects in the project status report. Throughout the fiscal year, we provided updates on 18 transportation capital projects. These projects are displayed on the map. Even though we're implementing the pavement management plan and we've committed to spending no less than 80% of our annual budget in the district for that year, which we met this year, you will still see projects all around town. And that's because, you know, as big projects go forward, sometimes they take time and they cross fiscal years. But you'll see those all across town, and you'll see improvements to all modes, not just roads, but bike and ped projects, transit projects, and all sorts of things. So those are all on there. If you have any additional questions on this, I'm happy to discuss it. Thank you.
Are there any questions from commissioners? Mark?
Is the status of the $684,000 project?
I appreciate you asking. Thank you. We have worked with NDOT staff to incorporate the comments that we received from the board, and that agreement was executed earlier this week.
Any other questions from the commissioners? Although this agenda item is informational only, I will open this item up to public comment if there's any member of the public that had any questions on this. And I see nobody approaching. So we will move on to agenda item 6B for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding a determination that BNC Construction, Inc. is the lowest responsive and responsible bidder pursuant to NRS Chapter 338 and awarding contract number 1819-237, CDBG College Parkway ADA Improvements Project to BNC Construction, Inc. for a total not to exceed amount of $200,233. And Dan, this one's yours.
Yeah. Good evening, Commissioner Dan Stuckey, City Engineer for the record. I'm assuming that there'll probably be some questions on this one, so I want to kind of summarize the history on this for all of you. As you mentioned, you've seen it before, College Parkway ADA improvements, a lot of concrete work. It's 100% grant funded through the CDBG grant. This was seen before by you on June 12th, I believe was the date. It was approved, awarded to NVNJ Construction Group. There's been a series of events that have happened to that, and the city has deemed NVNJ Construction Group, Inc. non-responsive prior to executing the contract. And so I'll go over the history, but I first kind of wanted to point out the typical timeline of a normal project that the city goes through, just so you can understand what we expect typically. basically when the contract's awarded, within 10 to 15 days, we receive all the required documents that we need to execute the contract and move forward with planning for construction and getting out there and building projects. We've never had an issue. I asked around Public Works. A lot of our guys have been around for a while. At least definitely in the last 10 to 15 years, we've never had an issue with a contractor. I think we have a good history trying to work with contractors and making sure, you know, when we come to a governing board and a contract is awarded, that that's the contractor that sticks with us to the project. But there was a series of events that I want to document just for the record. It is in the packet page number 67. This was sent out by our purchasing and contracts, Carol Akers on this. If I just can go through a couple steps of kind of the timeline and how we got to this point. The bid opening for this project was on May 22nd. On May 24th, 2 days after the bid opening, NVNJ was contacted and you know, notified of all the different requirements that were required to award and execute the contract, including registration through SAM.gov, and that is required on all federal-funded projects. And this was clearly stated in the bid documents when it was advertised and everything, so nothing, no surprise there. On June 12th, it was approved, as I mentioned, at RTC. On June 18th, the contract was given to NVNJ. On June 20th, more reminders were given to NVNJ about needed documents as well as the SAM.gov registration. On July 15th, a notice of compliance was emailed to NVNJ construction, giving notice that the auto insurance certificate has received, but there was still some, the certificate was not issued to Carson City. It was issued to the Nevada Department of Transportation. There were some other requirements of that letter, including, again, the SAM.gov registration still had not been completed. A couple more steps. We still don't have all the required documents that we are required to start the project. So a big history of reaching out to them, and this is beyond what our construction manager, Jeff Freeman, here through various phone calls and emails trying to get them to respond to certain questions and get the project going, that's not included in here. So that's the history, again, of where we are today and why we're in front of you. I do want to point out that the bid award for this contract, the second lowest bidder was within, it was about $3,000 more than what was previously awarded to NVNJ. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
I have a question for Todd. knew that was coming, huh? So my understanding is that Carson City has never executed the contract to NVNJ Construction, correct? Because of the noncompliance with providing the required documents.
Todd Reese, Deputy District Attorney for the record. Mr. Chair, that's correct. Carol Akers is a required signature on the contract, and she has not signed the contract pending receipt of all the required documents to execute the contract.
So there is no executed contract?
In my opinion, there is no executed contract.
Okay. So then can you walk us through your legal opinion on the process here so that everybody up here understands what it is that we're being asked to do today?
Sure. Essentially, there's a process to whereby in the bid process, the city can declare a bidder non-responsive and or cancel the contract or cancel the bid in the best interest of the city. The staff has sent a letter, Carol sent a letter doing that, and the RTC is essentially being asked to ratify that, if you will, and if it believes that action should be ratified, then it's being asked to award the contract to the second lowest responsive bidder. I've reviewed NVNJ Construction provided a response to Carol's letter. I've reviewed their contentions. I generally don't agree with them, as Brad, or as the chair mentioned. they took the position that there is a contract with the city, and my opinion is that there is not a contract between NVNJ and the city. I think that the board is on a sound legal basis to take whatever action it desires to take, whether that's to approve this item and award the contract to VNC, or whether that's to decline to take any action on this item, in which case that would be a message to staff to work with NVNJ. I'm happy to answer further questions if you have them, with the caveat that if you ask a question that gets into legal strategy, that I'll politely decline to answer it.
Is there a representative from NVNJ Construction Group here tonight? No. Okay. Any of the commissioners have questions for legal or for other staff on this item? And does everybody understand what we're being asked to do?
Another question. So can you point to me in the contract where in the contract or the bid documents where it indicates that the purchasing manager is the actual final sign-off to execute the contract? Is there, so that where is the clear documentation that it's not here when we approve it as RTC, that the next final step is actually submit all your required documents and the final signature is Ms. Akers from purchasing that says now you get a go order, in essence, to a notice to proceed, I think is the right wording I should have used, but where is that?
Thank you, Supervisor. That's a wonderful question. And I'm not sure that I can point to a specific clause in the bid documents or in the contract. However, I will ask Carol to come up and let us know if I'm mistaken. The general basis for that I'm basing my opinion on is that to sign any contract, all of the signatures have to be signed. That's a general proposition of the law. And here, not all of the city's signatures were fixed, and so it's our opinion, or my opinion, that a contract has not yet come into force between NVNJ and the city.
Good afternoon. Carol Akers, purchasing contracts for Carson City. Generally, on the first page of the contract, there is a line that kind of states the contract's not in place until it's been approved and all signatures have been collected, which I think that one just says that it's been approved by the RTC. But generally, the contract also won't be, I mean, I don't sign off until I check that everything that's required has been received. And NVNJ also has not received an executed copy since we haven't received everything. So,
did we receive a signed copy from them? And then you're the only missing signature?
Yeah, they've submitted in their signature page with their insurance and the corrected insurance. Again, but this took after I had to send them the notice of compliance.
And then what is, if I may, Mr. Chair, and what is, so what is still missing for them to actually go to work?
So they're still missing the federal required sheets. I believe it was C-35 and C-34 that were in the bid documents that they're not technically required when the bid is submitted, but it is required for the execution of the contract.
And those are the two items in the bullets on packet page 72, right. The wage comparison worksheet and the election of scheduled work week.
And those are required from the federal government for any contractor. So it's not specific to, and it would be the same for anyone that we give an award to. And, okay, I just wanted to make sure. So they still, and they're not responsive by being here today to discuss, for us to give them any questions to actually see where those documents are.
Okay. So I want to read into the record the language in the contract. First, whereas on the first page of the contract says, whereas the purchasing and contracts administrator for city is authorized pursuant to Nevada Revised Statutes 338 and Carson City Purchasing Resolution number 1990-R71 to approve and accept this contract as set forth in and by the following provisions. So that's the language that you were referring to. Okay.
It doesn't set the order, right?
Right, but it does say it's not a valid contract if it doesn't have her signature. Okay, any other questions from the commissioners on this item? Mark? Did you have a question, Chaz? Okay, Chaz and then Mark.
Not really a question, but just a comment. I mean, I've been in the civil engineering business for 40-plus years, and generally, if you know someone's not responsive with their sign-up documents after 2 months, then we're going to get a lousy project when they get to construction. So I don't have a problem with awarding it to BNC at all.
Mark?
A simple one. Do you have like a checklist that you send them that you check a box that they got this done on this date, this done, this done, this done?
And that not necessarily a checklist, but I mean, in the email it is described what we need back, their signatures, their insurance, their bonds, and then if it's a federally funded project, what's required on that as well.
So, yeah, I was going to say what Chad said. Yeah, if they're non-responsive, it makes you very concerned about you. Thank you.
And Commissioner Bagwell and I have had some conversations about this item regarding maybe tightening up the language in the contract going forward so that we have specific dates and milestones so that it makes it easier for us to terminate a non-responsive bid and award to another potential bidder in a situation like this. So I think that, you know, we'll be able to look at that and try to prevent this from happening again. So, Mr. DA, I'm not sure that this is an item that we should have public comment on since it's a legal matter. So what is your opinion on that?
Mr. Chair, as far as public comment, I will leave that in your discretion. I believe that...
Commissioner Bagwell just... Yeah, the actual action item is to award the contract, so I will open this up to public comment if there's any member of the public that has any comments on this. And I see nobody approaching, so I will bring this back to the commission and entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, before you
yes, sir.
Entertain a motion, please allow me to... please excuse the interruption. I just wanted to, going to your question earlier about the required signatures, there are three signature pages in the contract. One is for the contractor, one is for the RTC, and there's a signature page for the city as well. And the city's required signatures to execute the contract are by legal, by the chief financial officer, and by purchasing and contracts. And according to the language of the contract, it signifies the city's intent to be legally bound. So my interpretation of that is that all three signatures are required.
Thank you. Would any commissioner like to make a motion on this item?
I move to award the contract as presented to VNC Construction.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and multiple seconds. Any discussion on this item? Go ahead, Lori.
So I just want to put on the record that I was willing to give NVNJ time today to discuss with me what went wrong, and that when I read their memo, they said everything was here and we're ready to go, and yet I'm still being told two documents are outstanding and they're not here. So to me, it also showed that they're not serious about wanting to get the job done. And so even though administratively they might have failed, I think they also failed the system by not showing up today to tell me, sorry about these misunderstandings, all the paperwork's in, and we'll start the job tomorrow if you're sign off. Well, that didn't happen either, so I feel very comfortable with the decision that we made.
And again, I would note for the record that the awarding the contract to VNC Construction is only at an additional cost of less than $3,000 over the initial bid. All right. Any further discussion?
Just, and I'm assuming that we've used VNC before because I recognize the name, so their documents are in. Okay.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. All right. That item passes unanimously. We are now on agenda item 6C for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding recommending to the Board of Supervisors acceptance of the 90% design of the South Carson Complete Streets project. Dan, I believe this is yours too.
Yep. Good evening, Commission. Dan Stuckey, City Engineer for the record. Tom Grundy, Project Manager for the South Carson Complete Streets project. We're back here again for the 90% update on the project. Today, we've got a lot of stuff planned for you guys. We wanted to give you an update on, you know, where we've been since last time we saw you back in March regarding the update. We also want to take the opportunity, you know, we did receive comments from you all last time in March, and we wanted to take an opportunity to kind of step through those comments and show you how they've been addressed today. So we'll do that. We'll also review the updated illustrative drawings for the 90%, so that's another opportunity for you to comment on the 90%. And I want to make sure, because last time I know we gave you some super tiny little handouts that weren't very productive for you all, so I want to make sure that I think everybody's happy, hopefully, up there. You got your 11 by 17s. There's also big-sized maps in the back of the room, so hopefully we can have a good discussion tonight on that. We will talk about, you know, as we get obviously closer to construction, we're starting to look at traffic control and how that's going to look like. So we want to talk a little bit about some of the details there of how it's going to look and kind of the beauty of the CMAR project is we're sitting down with the contractor right now. And contractors, obviously, they know traffic control, and it's good. We're having some creative discussions there of trying to get really a project that's going to have the least amount of impact to the public and the businesses along the corridor. We'll give you a schedule update moving forward from today, what it's going to look like. And then lastly, as we always do, we're going to end with some various communication tools that are available to the public, including the Carson Proud website. We're also going to show you a roundabout education video that we developed based on feedbacks from you and the general public as far as an instructional video on how to navigate a roundabout. So we'll show that at the very end. So here's an update where we've been. May 16th, after we saw you in March, we went to the board for the 60% update and approval to advance the design to 90%. June 12th, we were back here for this same project. It wasn't really a design update, but we talked about future traffic impacts and expectations, and I felt like we had a really, really nice discussion at that meeting. I did want to follow up that is posted on, I believe, the FAQ section and on the Carson Proud website, a link to the report that was with that, as well as a link to the video of our discussion on that evening. So wanted to point that out. August 5th, we went to the 90% update to RAC as they are contributing some funds to this project. So we were there, I guess, last week. And then, obviously, staff's been working hard, and all of the design team's been working hard on advancing that design from the 60 to the 90%. As I mentioned, updates on Carson Proud, we've really tried to make an effort to keep the public updated, and obviously the roundabout video as well with that. We got a lot of help. Rachel Schneider really developed a nice video, and we're excited to show you. I did want to point this out because this is, I think, you know, again, we've tried to make an effort of really keep the public informed on the progression of design. So I think it's worth noting this is our 17th public meeting that we've had since 2016 when it started with the corridor study on this project. And that includes all the boards and committees as well as general public meetings. So I did want to point that out. So we'll go through the comment resolution, and again, we're going to go through each of those maps after this. So if we want to discuss any of these in more detail, we can talk about it after or talk about it here. One of the comments that we received from you last time was that there was no bicycle facilities between Snyder and Clearview, particularly on that northbound the northbound side, because on the, if you remember, the westbound, or sorry, the southbound side, there's the, on the west side of the street, there's the multi-use path that we're extending where it currently ends at Appian, the NDOT multi-use path. We are extending that up to Clearview, and then it crosses over to the east side of the street at Clearview. So we have it there, but we also, and I'll show you in the exhibits, we also added a northbound bike lane from Snyder to Clearview. So bicyclists that are heading northbound from Snyder can ride in the bicycle lane until they can get on the multi-use path at Clearview. So I did want to point that out. One of the comments we had was we have a center median at Roventini. It was in the 60%. It still is in the 90%. But one of the comments was, can you remove it and just put a pork chop at the Save Mart driveway so you could still prevent the left in, left out? We did review this. We felt that the median needed to stay in because it's not just preventing a left turn out of the Save Mart, but it's also taking up pavement area to transition between two lanes in each direction to three lanes in each direction around that area. So it's needed, and I can show you when we get to the exhibit, but the median is needed there. But it was a good comment, and we did review it, so I wanted to point that out. One of the comments we received last time was connecting the multi-use path where we have those rapid rectangular flashing beacon crosswalks, the flashing beacon crosswalks there, a way we need to connect. So if people want to get out on the multi-use path and use those crosswalk locations, there has to be a connection there. So we did incorporate those in the plans. So I wanted to point that out. Last time we had the 60%, there was a crosswalk on the west side at Road Street that was missing, a north-south crosswalk. That has been added, and it should be in the signal and striping plans that were in the part of your packet, and we'll show it on these maps coming up. There was a good discussion on east-west crosswalk locations at Rhodes in Colorado. I think there was concern about accelerating vehicles into the crosswalk. We took those comments very seriously. We reviewed them. What we have in the 90%, based on all the different things we looked at, we feel like the current locations are the best locations. So we can show you that when we go through. Another comment we received, which is a really good comment, was the rumble strips between lanes and a roundabout. And honestly, that was something we hadn't really considered. We did look into this. It's not standard. And we were worried. We talked with our operations and maintenance folks. And the thing with rumble strips is it's a good place for runoff to settle, drainage to settle in those strips, and freeze thaw issues, plus snow plows catching on those. So from a maintenance standpoint, it's not ideal. So we do not have it in the design at this stage. So I did want to point that out, but it was a good idea and we did look into it. This is a big comment that was not shown on the 60% design. We do have it in the 90%, but transition location. So these are transitions where the northbound, primarily where cyclists are on the multi-use path, and before they enter the roundabout, they have an opportunity to take a lane, or it works the opposite way as well. If they're using a bike lane, like heading southbound into the roundabout, they have an opportunity. If they don't want to take a lane into the roundabout, they have an opportunity to exit and use the sidewalk area before they enter the roundabout. So we can show you those on the illustrative maps, but it's really clear to see on this the striping plans that we included with the packet. So I did want to mention that we did add those. So with that, we can get into these exhibits. I have a couple things that I circled that I wanted to highlight, but for the most part, this is your guys' forum to offer whatever discussion you want to have or comments you have on this. So if I don't hear any comments, I'll just keep it moving. So stop me if you want to discuss anything. This I did circle in red. You can see there at Snyder, there was a crosswalk missing there. That was not included in the 90%, but will be included. So a north-south crosswalk across Snyder. So that will be included. I just wanted to point that out at that location. Yeah.
Before you go off that slide, looking at the MDOT boundary on Appian Way, it looks like there's some improvements that are built on the MDOT side. Just out of curiosity, do we enter into some sort of agreement with them to build those improvements, or is that existing?
That is existing. Yeah, so those are all existing, so we won't be working in MDOT right-of-way.
with this project.
So the Appian, the left, or excuse me, the right out on Appian is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Good question. Any other ones on this, or go to sheet two? Okay. This one, this is where that Save Mart driveway, where the pork chop, so you can see, I don't know, do I have a mouse?
You have the pointer.
Oh, I can just do it on the computer. I can get it. So right there, that was where the suggestion of the pork chop was. However, if you see this median here, it kind of gets a little bit different looking there. That's because we're transitioning to 3 lanes from 2 lanes there. So we're trying or I guess vice versa, coming 3 to 2 northbound. So we're trying to take up some pavement area. So we need that median there to make that happen. So just wanted to point that out. That's the reason we did not incorporate the pork chop. Again, another good comment, though. Anything else on this sheet?
I was trying to pull up the striping plan real quick. So the left side of the sheet going northbound, we have 3 lanes, and then we're necking down to 2. Do we have signage in there? So that's why I was trying to pull up the signage striping plan real quick. Okay. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Tom just mentioned they're not showing up, but they will be.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, I have questions, a couple. So the bike paths, bike lane is going to end on Clearview heading south. So then there's an expectation to use the multi-use path type after that. So is there a shoulder at all in there on the paves on the highway side? Doesn't need to be marked as a bike lane, but most of your roadies aren't going to go on the multi-use. They'll stay on the highway to get past that point, even though the bike lane ends. Is there a shoulder there at all? It doesn't look like there's any shoulder there. Looks like you're right on top of the curb almost.
There is no shoulder southbound after, where that transition. We would expect that they would use the multi-use path or take a lane.
Because I would have proposed to share the road sign there to let people know that now you're in the road, now you're not on the lane, but since there's no shoulder, that creates a problem for them. So I understand that. I'm going to speak to this issue on this one, but using green paint instead of white paint for these transition zones for the bike paths to me is important, and I hate doing this at 90%, but we're still able to talk. So, and Reno has some good examples of using the green paint with the bike logo and the cross hatches as they move into these transitions to protect the bicyclists when people want to make those loaded turn lanes. If they see green and they've even gone to like a crosswalk green, white, or doesn't have to be that. You can do the skinny green that go with the path versus across the path as you fish into these transition zones where the cars are moving, because they'll know to move there better than and be aware at least. So I'm hoping I could encourage that use of green paint without it going over budget for this and be out there with most of the new bicycle design with the green. And there's more than one this one spot as we go through each page. So that's a comment. I'd sure like to see that become part of this plan, actually.
Yeah, we will look into that. And we have been, obviously, on some other projects that have come before you, we've looked at green paint, and we've internally researched some different options there, because obviously we want something that's, from a maintenance standpoint, that's going to hold up. There have been some really good discussions. We'll look into it here. Just to clarify, you're talking about these transition areas, and I know what you meant in South Reno, how they basically just stripe those transition where you're crossing the lane, but not the entire bike lane.
No, just those transition zones, and then the logo's green.
Yeah.
Sometimes with a green background, but we don't have to carry it to excess, but I would hope, the Moana's a good test because it's a heavy traffic area in there, but they just added that to them. They weren't on there before.
Mm-hmm.
So I just would love to see that just a little more cautious with the bicycles.
No, it's a really good comment, and we will look at it, and we have been looking at it, and that's something, if we can make it work, it's an easy add to add at this point, even at 90%, so we will look into it.
Dan, and first of all, I want to say my appreciation to your staff, because I met with Tom about a number of issues yesterday, and we talked about several things. And one of the things we talked about was additional directional and guidance signage for bicyclists. And this is one place, the southbound bike lane, where it drops. And I think Tom said you'd add this. There should be a sign that directs them to the multi-use path. But just the reason that Mark mentioned is they have no shoulder. They have no option. So just give them some guidance so they don't suddenly get there and go, oh, what happens now? Right? They need a heads up.
Tom Grundy with Public Works, and that was a good conversation, Chaz, yesterday, and I appreciate that. And we will add the additional signage, the bike lane ends and bike lane ahead, those types of signs to the project. And we are also going to add some directional signage. There's a parallel bike route that goes up Silver Sage and Route, and we'll add directional signage at Koontz to direct cyclists over to that one if they choose to go there. That's bike route 395.
Yeah, actually, Highway 50 is considered as the state applied and got a recognition for that to be a cross-country trail. So that signage would help that. Maybe they could even be signed for that someday, that's the route to get you up to Spooner to head out that way. So
we're including those signs, too. Yeah, that's Interstate Route 50.
Any other questions on Sheet 2? Right, Sheet 3.
So here's Sheet 3, Clearview to Casino Fandango. I wasn't going to discuss anything on this in particular, but yeah,
if you ask me questions. If you could, I don't know if you've seen the email from Andrew Fromdahl regarding the stacking, extending the turn lanes for stacking at Olive Garden and Raley's.
Is that a recent email?
He's sent multiple emails over the last year or so. His concern is that when you look at Olive Garden and then when you look at Raley's, that the stacking is not adequate for future traffic growth. So his concern is that what will happen is that traffic will back up into the traffic lane and not allow through traffic.
Yeah. So I know that those were part of on June 12th when we brought the analysis by Headway, to you, that was looked at for a deceleration lane there, and it was not selected as one. So we did analyze it and look at it, and there was no warrant for it at that point.
So addressing his comments, when it's analyzed, they looked at future traffic counts. So explain to me, what's the downside to adding stacking now versus waiting till later when we'd have to rip out all the landscaping and the multi-use path?
So if it was warranted the Headway study looked at not only now but also 2040 scenario. And it was not warranted in 2040. So that's the projection that they look at the future. So if they didn't feel like it was needed in 2040, then there was really no need to do it now. And that's really the scope of the analysis that they looked at with that study.
Great. So after the meeting, maybe tomorrow or sometime next week, I'd like to get together with staff so that we can answer this email and let him know that it was due to a third-party consultant's report and they're experts in the field, and so we have to be able to rely on those third parties when we're looking at a project of this scope.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd be happy to. I don't believe I've ever gotten the email, but we'd be happy to respond to it and talk. Okay, great. Yeah, definitely.
I emailed it over to Lucia, so you have an electronic copy to.
All right, thank you. Were there any, Mark, on Sheet 3?
A couple simple, not necessarily just Sheet 3, but when you look at the on the bike lane again, where you look at the courtyard and you look at the turn off for Taco Bell, the markings for the bike lane, I would like, if possible, if it makes sense, to put them where the turnouts are. So when people come out of there, they see bike lane on the pavement. So they don't think that's just shoulder. They'll know that's a bike. So when they come out of those types of parking lots, just move the bike lane marking to it's visible to those folks. And yeah, that would be just not those spots, but along the way. So because you have them close, but they're not right there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. We'll want to talk internally just to make sure that meets any standards that are out there. But I think that's an excellent idea. Yeah.
So, Mark, are you talking about just the bike lane or the bike lane and the multi-use path?
Just the bike lane. Just the bike lane, so when the cars come out, they're going to look more cautiously for a bike coming versus a big truck or car coming down the road.
Any additional questions on sheet 3? All right. Sheet 4.
So I did not have anything called out specifically on this sheet, but again, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
A couple comments. If you look where the turnoff is for Michael Hole, and you see the bike lane, and all of a sudden there's enough room of blacktop to put a turn lane in there, but there's no markings for that, so all of a sudden the bike lane's out away from the curb with, like, is that a breakdown spot for cars to break down and park, or is that supposed to be an ingress into the parking area, or it's just a bunch of blacktop there?
It's the deceleration lane in the Michael Hole.
Oh. See all that blacktop?
So that is a decel lane, and it will stay a decel lane, but I think we're missing a stripe there that needs to be to separate the bike lane from and designate that a decel lane there. So I'm not sure if that's in the signage or striping plans or not, but it's definitely not showing up here.
So people that come out of Koontz Lane actually are going to accelerate across that lane across the bike lane and then into the lane of traffic. That'd be a weird spot for diesel because they're coming right through the intersection jumping off to the right.
We need to look at this because my understanding is that driveway is typically blocked off too. So staff will revisit this. That's a great comment and make it right.
All right. Thank you.
Right. Because otherwise, Mark's comments are correct. Traffic turning south from Koontz on the South Carson Street is going to accelerate right into the deceleration lane. Okay. So you'll look at that. And can you send an email out to the commissioners when you have a resolution to that so we know?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Any other questions on sheet 4? I don't see any. So let's move on to sheet 5.
So on this one, I didn't have anything circled. Again, this is Moses and then where the frontage road begins.
And this, at one point, was one of the original locations for one of the median safe crosswalks, right? But we removed that back, I think, at 30%.
Yeah, so on the next sheet, you'll see it show up across from the Applebee's there.
Okay. Any questions on sheet 5? Okay, on to sheet 6.
So, as you mentioned, Supervisor Bonkowski, or Chair Bonkowski, here's the location of one of those flashing beacon crossings. Here, and you can't see on this map, but I did want to point out how we mentioned earlier, there is, you can see it in the signage and striping plans that we provided, but there is a gap here, so if somebody using the multi-use path wanted to cross over and use this crosswalk, they would not be trampling a bunch of landscaping to get to that crossing. So
that's from the frontage road to the proposed crosswalk?
Not from the frontage road, it's from the multi-use path to the proposed crosswalk.
Okay. So one of my comments had been that people walk down the frontage road, so we want to make sure that they also have access to get to the multi-use path from the frontage road. So we just need to continue whatever is designed for that pass-through. It probably should go all the way to the frontage road.
Yeah, so we do have a couple crossings on the frontage road, but I agree with what you're saying. And those areas where you want to encourage people to cross South Carson Street, we should have that connection and a crossing on the other side. So, yes, we will look at that, and we will provide a response to you on where those would be.
Any other comments or questions on sheet 6? Sheet 7.
So, again, I had nothing highlighted on this sheet, but any comments we have to talk about?
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so it's the same situation at Michael Hole where there's blacktop between the bike lane and so, like, the cell or decel lanes in there. All of a sudden, there's just a bunch of blacktop.
Yeah, so that is an existing decel Excel lane today that we're keeping as part of the project.
So hopefully you would put that transition zone for the bike lane with the striping and the logo so that cars know to come into there without, at that point, into crossing the bike lane instead of, you know what I'm saying?
Or, yeah, is that yeah. Better? Yes.
And then also where they're going to come out, I don't know how you mark that one, but where people are going to accelerate coming out of Michael Hole, how you mark that so they take the road till a point and then cross the bike lane.
Yeah, so that's another area we need to look at from a cyclist perspective and make sure that's safe there. So we'll look at the striping.
Because the same thing happens down farther north. You got blacktop picked up off of this street. I can't tell what it is, but at the end of the page there, you can see the blacktop coming out from the pavement there again, the separation. It can't be a decel. It must be a accelerate lane. See, that's...
Mark, if I may, there's actually more detail shown on the striping plans, which are those tiny little ones that are in the pack.
Yeah, the tiny ones.
Which are hard to read. And the striping plans do actually show what you're talking about. Dash brakes in the bike lane.
Okay.
But that is exactly at these dash broken locations that the green paint would be very good to have.
Yeah, I had my comments on those, Chad. Yeah. Yeah.
In that transition from sheet 7 to sheet 8, that's where the new Nissan dealership is being built. So does this plan incorporate the to-be-built improvements for the Nissan dealership? Is access changing there, and does that need to be incorporated into this plan?
They are actually using the existing driveway location for their building. So there's no update as far as to our
plans. the northern driveway doesn't have a deceleration lane. Is that driveway going to continue to exist and not be off of the shared access that's farther south?
Yeah, so I guess I'm confused by your question, because the driveway here all.
That's for Michael's cycle, correct?
It's a shared driveway for both of them is the way Nissan is set up for that driveway.
So currently there's no deceleration to pull into that driveway,
right? No.
And there's no plans to change that?
No.
Okay. Should there be, considering that you have the deceleration lane that's just slightly south, would it be possible to continue that deceleration lane up through the shared driveway? And would that make sense? I don't don't see plans for anything else with that.
Yeah, so I don't believe it was part of the study that was done by Headway to look at that specific driveway. So we need, I mean, we'll look at it and to make sure that there's nothing that's needed there to extend that D-cell lane there and just keep extending it north, I guess. But, yeah, so we'll look into it for that.
And would you please just double-check, because I believe we signed a contract requirements with them to do some of this work in concert. So
yeah,
just so that there isn't questions later or anything, please be sure that they've seen it and sign off that it meets the contractual relationship that we
absolutely.
Did. I just would like to be on the safe side there.
Yeah.
So you already have existing diesel lane for Toyota and then for Subaru. And so we just have that one section that pops back out there. It would make sense to just continue that decelerate lane all the way through there.
Yeah. We'll look at it. Okay. It does make sense.
One thing I wanted to point out is that all these deceleration lanes are predicated on a 45-mile-an-hour posted speed limit, and it's going down.
Where?
This area is posted 35, I believe, right?
Yes, 35.
So I don't know if that, I mean, I'm not a transportation engineer, but, you know, that might relieve some of the requirement to have a deceleration lane.
My concern is more about the crossing back and forth continually across the bike lane. Yeah. Anybody have any other comments or questions on sheet 7 or 8? Okay, let's move on to sheet 9.
So this is the other location south of Fairview where we have the flashing beacon crossing. We placed it, last time you saw it, we were trying to do a mid-block crossing here, and we had it north of Rhodes. There was some really good discussion at that meeting. We moved it to the intersection on the south side. We analyzed a lot of different locations. We think this is the best, particularly because there's a good likelihood in the future, particularly if the armory site ever develops, that could be a signal there. And so we're basically setting it up to accommodate the future signal there. So just it made a lot of sense to put it here.
If we could go back to sheet 8, we had public comment at 60% design regarding the intersection of Sonoma and either a roundabout or a light at some point in the future there. Has there been any further discussion about that?
We looked at it, when we evaluated the roundabouts early on back in 2017, we looked at probably 6 or 7 different locations for roundabouts. Sonoma, there just wasn't the demand for the left turn, and we've mentioned this at other meetings, even not just now, but in the future. I think there was something like in the peak hour, there was 11 left-hand turns that were happening there. So to build a roundabout based off 11 left-hand turns just didn't make a lot of sense. As I think we mentioned last time, we are always continuing to evaluating as, as we advance and in the future, we're going to continually evaluate intersections along this corridor. But as of now, a signal or a roundabout has not been identified for that location.
So this is an interesting location because the public comment at 60% design was from the representative of a company, a gaming company that purchased the property on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
They're building a facility there. So they may generate quite a bit more traffic, but I would think that if that was the case, then we're going to have a discussion about some pro rata share of the cost of that intersection based on their increase in traffic counts.
That's the current kind of standard that we're following right now for these projects is evaluating as they come in and see if something like that would be necessary. Yeah, we would look into it.
Thank you. So were there any questions on sheet 9? Questions or comments? Okay. Then sheet 10.
So this is in front of the Railroad Museum. Again, I have nothing to comment on this sheet.
Any questions or comments? On the sheet 11.
So this is Fairview Drive intersection. I had nothing in particular to discuss on this sheet.
This one question I have is south of Fairview, between the proposed landscaping and the Southgate Apartments, there looks like there's some area there that's not going to be improved, and I think it extends further south. Is that just going to remain dirt?
Yeah, so it will remain that. We kind of were using, there's a sidewalk, an existing sidewalk that meanders through there, and we are kind of using that as the boundary as far as our landscape improvements for this project.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So who owns that then?
Who does it on that?
It's us. We own that.
The gray band, that's the existing sidewalk? The gray band on the east side?
Yes. So, try to get my cursor up there. Right about, it's kind of running right around there.
And that existing sidewalk is going to remain? So we'll have a sidewalk there and then the multi-use path adjacent to it.
Okay. Yes.
Questions, comments? Sheet 12.
Sheet 11. Is there anything else on sheet 11 that you wanted to discuss? No.
I just had a question. I guess the road's changing, so they make a left out of Office Depot there and cross the traffic. And it's the first time I noticed that. I got a ticket once there for doing something wrong there, so that changes that. But the problem is there you can't see the traffic where the stop bar is. You have to crawl out into the crosswalk to see the cars coming in. So I don't know if that can be fixed or not, but that is a difficult place to pull out and see the traffic coming from the south.
We have
just a thought, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's a discussion we had with our landscape architect as far as, if I can get that cursor. You're talking about creeping out here and making that left-hand turn.
That's how I got that.
We've tried to limit the vegetation growth in this area as far as, you know, high-growing type trees to help with sight distance there, to help with that so they're not having to creep out so you can get a better sight distance and view oncoming traffic. So that was a discussion we had early on with our landscape designer.
All right, thanks.
Ready to move on?
Yeah.
So here's the roundabout. I do have some discussion items I want to talk about here. So I think since last time we saw you, I think it's pretty much stayed the same. I mean, there's been some details that have been refined. One of the comments we had last time was those transition locations for cyclists, either in taking a lane or getting off the roadway to use either the concrete sidewalk until they can get on the road again. I did want to point, and that's really what those red circles are here. So there's a transition point somewhere in here, or no, it's back here, sorry. Basically, you're running northbound as a cyclist. This is your opportunity to take a lane. There'll be signage, very clear signage here. You'll ride in the bike lane, and then there's this crossing location here to either enter the roundabout to go northbound there through the roundabout. And then over on this side, there's an opportunity here to transition, or I guess, sorry, here there's the northbound bike lane. So they would ride through the roundabout taking a lane, and then they could go over to the bike lane and head north. If you're going south on a bike, same thing. Here's your transition. You're in a bike lane. You can transition off and go on the sidewalk here until you can enter back down here and take up that bike lane again. So I did want to point out those transition points. They're much easier to see in the striping and signage plan so than on these exhibits, but I wanted to point that out. And then the blue, I do want to talk about this bypass lane. I want to, the history of this, I think when we first started, we were going to use with the roundabout, this is, you know, at the 10% design level, we were looking at using the existing bypass lane. And I want to make sure there's no confusion. We are not using the existing bypass lane here. This is a much tighter radius, encouraging very much slower speeds entering the, well, not entering the roundabout, but around that turn. So I do want to make sure there's no confusion that this is, it's not what is out there today. It's much slower and safer. I also want to point out that, you know, if you're traveling northbound, entering this roundabout, there's a lot going on as far as kind of like constricting entering the roundabout, some visuals, and sometimes those visuals are very effective at reducing speeds as well. So I wanted to point out that those also help with slowing down vehicles as they either enter the roundabout or use this bypass lane here. And just from a, you know, we, from a multi-lane, we had it as a single lane, we changed it to a multi-lane. There was concern about a multi-lane, and so really for effective traffic operations, not only now, but in the future, this bypass lane was needed. The current configuration was needed. And so really just to make it more simplistic for that turn, right? That's why we are to the point we are today. So we've looked at a bunch of different options here, but this is the preferred best option that we have considering everything that we have going on here. So I just wanted to point out that that radius is much different than what it is today. That I'll take questions. Yeah.
So the on northbound, that little sliver of bike lane, seems to me that should go further north because there just seems to be too much of a no man's land between here and here. See what I'm saying?
You're talking about this right here?
Yeah. Well, so you have.
Oh, right here. Gotcha.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, Greg, I met with Tom yesterday, and we talked about this, and I would like to start off by saying I do not agree that that bypass lane is needed. The radius is less than what's there now, but it's still way more than a standard entry radius to a roundabout to slow traffic down to a 20-mile-an-hour design speed. So, in my opinion, and I would say professional opinion, really, a better solution, especially for bicyclists, is to have the northbound entry to the roundabout the same as the southbound one, which has much sharper radiuses. If you're in the right lane, you still go straight through, and if you had the same configuration or a similar one for northbound, that would just be the same. You're in the right-bound lane, but you're skirting the outside of the roundabout, and you shoot off up Stewart. The problem with the dedicated right-turn lane is, for bicyclists, either you've got to get out in the lane, and then you've got to cross the lane. And right now, as it's shown, which is what Greg was speaking to, they're dumped into no man's land. They're forced actually into the lane for 50 or 60 feet before they have the opportunity to exit left on the striping right before the hard island. So Tom and I talked about this. I still believe that that should be changed. If it's not changed, you really need to keep the wider lane further north so that the transition from the bike lane at the curb to the cut through to the roundabout lane is much sharper, and you definitely need guidance there, and you definitely need green striping. But with this setup, bicyclists who are going to be using this are mostly actually strangers because they're going to be on a through bike route. They have no clue what's going to happen here. They're on the multi-use path because that's all there is, right? There's no bike lane below. I mean, south of this. So they're faced with a decision. They've either got to take that cut through or they've got to stay on the path. And not knowing or looking at what they're facing, they're going to stay on the path because, you know, they're going to be out there mixing it up. If they got a, like a trailer, for example, in a long distance, I mean, they're going to be looking over their shoulder for 35-mile-an-hour traffic trying to get across the lane. I just don't think it's a good solution. So that's my two cents, but it definitely needs to be reconfigured if you still end up with this lane to make it safer for bicycles to cross that right slip lane.
Yeah. Oh, I left it on. I want to add it to make it 4 cents. instead of just two. I'm going to make it four. I have several thousands of miles on bikes. You wouldn't know by looking at my physique, but I have a lot of miles on bike. But I actually used to ride in San Francisco a bunch, too, in heavy, serious traffic and stuff. And there's a feeling of getting traffic, but we're in rural Carson City, and all of a sudden it looks like you just got thrown into San Francisco here, which you can have cars feet from you and you don't pay much attention to it. But this is scary to me, though, this roundabout. And I hate 90% for this discussion, but there's a roundabout kind of like this near the Maverick station up as you get on Veterans Parkway that has a free right. And they're screaming on that piece of roadway around that right-hand turn to go to BC. It doesn't have the island. It doesn't probably have the same curve, but I would never ride a bike through that. And then it's just an education level for folks. You know, this is Carson City. We got two roundabouts, so it's not like they're used to heavy traffic or the traffic being used to bicycles. And I saw you put the chevrons in there, and so for the bike chevrons, I guess those are in there, and those are kind of usually on bike boulevards, which means the bike have priority over the car. So if that's true, that's a whole different mentality for a bike boulevard. So I don't know how to address this because you're at 90%, but I do know it's a very uncomfortable position as you get older for you to look over your shoulder, to look that far back for traffic moving at a higher rate at you, to make that transition across the street is difficult. I mean, if you're 20 years old, your neck goes about another 30 degrees. You don't think about it. But as you get older, there's a trick to even turn and look to traffic without your bike taking off to the right-hand side of the road. So it's just a scary-looking experience to me. And I don't know what the fix is, but a roundabout, if you didn't have that free right turn, it would help a lot. Slowing traffic down and making the roundabout work like it's supposed to for everybody. And it's still going to be scary, but at least gets the speed of the traffic down. And you're not looking across traffic to make this zip across the traffic. And like you said, you can have bobs on there with people with trailers and kids and things coming off the multi-use pathway to get farther into town. So I don't know how else to address it other than make those comments.
So if I could just interject for a moment. The problem with combining those lanes is we only have one northbound lane that leaves the roundabout. And so if you're a cyclist and want to go north and the lanes are combined, you still have to cross a lane. You have to make that transition to go northbound, because if we combine these lanes, you basically have the outer lane would drop off to Stewart Street and there'd be one lane that goes north. So that transition would have to happen regardless, because we only need one lane going north out of the roundabout.
Right. Well, if you look across, though, the southbound traffic has those two lane choices, and you don't have to make that decision. You just go right on through the roundabout because it doesn't take off on a turn.
Because there's only one, right. But there's two lanes exiting to the south.
Junction, yeah.
And so we, as part of the study, actually with Headway, we looked at where to, because there's only one lane that needs to go northbound with current traffic volumes and future. And the best location to drop that lane was at Stewart. And from a navigational simplistic standpoint, we thought the bypass lane was going to avoid confusion from a driver. Because you can imagine you're entering the outside lane and you think you can go north through it to stay on Carson. And all of a sudden it ends and you're dropping off at Stewart. So there was a lot of thought put into this. And it's finding that balance and finding the most optimal design that we try to fit every need and make it, you know, as good a roundabout as we can. But those discussions did happen, and this is what we felt was the best scenario to make it happen.
NDOT, I don't know what you call them, down here on under 580, down by the Gateway gas station, and I can't think of any other landmark down there. When the freeway enters and exits where they cross traffic, I can't remember what that's called, versus a normal turn left or right, you could cross each other. That's what it's called. So when you come up to that in a bike lane, you notice the bike lanes disappear. There's a bike lane along there, else and there isn't a bike lane to get through that intersection. So they didn't show a route. The idea was, in our discussions when we were on the bike board, was to force people on the pathway and make them use the crosswalks, which roadies won't do most of the time. We were worried about kids and families on a bike lane thinking they're going in a safe place, and that's not as safe. So they just eliminated any signage or didn't say end of path or anything. It just disappears. So I don't know how that comes to play in here, but at least if you give them an expectation, you give them a safe lane, and all of a sudden they're crossing blindside across a fairly reasonable traffic situation to go into another lane of traffic with an ingress lane for bicycles, which is kind of unique. And then with the bike logos on there, hopefully people pick it up. So I know you've done a lot of work to try to do this, but I don't know what other solution there is that you guys haven't worked on. And Chaz, I was hoping, had a drawing to give you today. I have a drawing where the bike lane actually has the free right turn at an intersection versus the car, which is a little different, but that's way beyond this.
Well, I think, I mean, we do appreciate, I mean, like Chaz mentioned and Tom mentioned, the discussion I think yesterday was really productive, and I do think we can make this better for bicyclists, for the safety. So I do think we can better stripe or sign that area better than what it is in the 90%. But as far as the roundabout configuration, considering all the things that we've considered and what I just mentioned, I truly think this is the best case configuration that we can have.
Dan, if you look at the transition northbound to take a lane, this is what Greg and Chaz were talking about. So you have a short period that it's striped, and then it goes into the lane, and then you have to get out to the middle of the lane right before the hard median. And then you have a striped area that goes south from the hard median. Can you move the transition south by 40 or 50 yards so that you're going out into the lane farther south, which gives you the opportunity then to make that transition to where the current striping is before you get to the hard median? So it takes that hard left out of the transition for bikes, and it puts them out into the lane between the two lanes farther down south.
Yeah, and we actually, no, that's a great comment, and I think that's definitely a thing we should implement. We actually talked to the roundabout designer this morning about this transitional area, and we did discuss having that happen further down to the south. So yes, I think that's a good solution and can make this better.
I'd be interested to hear what Chaz and Mark think of that. I mean, for me as a bike rider, that would make it easier for me because then I'm out between the lanes before the traffic starts getting crazy, and there you have cars trying to cut lanes because they're going to miss their turn going into the roundabout. So at least you get out there out of the traffic a little sooner. So I'd be interested to hear what you guys think of that.
So somewhere, if you can see my cursor, happening somewhere back here, they would get off the multi-use path back probably somewhere here, and then maybe that transitional point would happen kind of in this area rather than up here.
Well, I'm not entirely sure I agree with that. The advantage of having them end up in the middle of the chevron striping is they are separated more from the lanes by that point. I think the key thing for me is making their transition reasonably sharp across the lane, because you don't want to have this very oblique crossing of the lane, because then you're in the lane for a lot longer. And so I think, you know, maybe you could move it up a few feet, but still within the current chevron split, because you're giving them hopefully not a false sense of security, but some sense of separation from the cars. Mm-hmm. Or more, well, not sense, but actually more separation. So I mean, I don't know. Your consultant is well-versed in this stuff, but if it was me, I'd like to make my look and see what's happening and then get across as soon as I could. It's just, and you probably get several different opinions from different bicyclists on that. I think the green paint in whatever transition there is going to be important, very important.
You know, I agree with Chaz, because there's a safety zone when they cross there that's a buffer between them and the traffic. So if they're, for some freaky reason, they're not comfortable, they feel very comfortable there and even stop if you have to. So I'm very comfortable with that transition somewhere like within that striped zone in there, and then extending the lane like Greg talked about so that you're safe and then you make the turn.
Extending the lane further to the north, so taking this up and making this a more...
Closer, okay, so it's green, and they're thinking about it, and they can make, if they have a mirror like you're supposed to, which I don't, that's part of my problem, they can see the cars back there coming, and they can make that transition or slow down what they're doing or even stop if they have to.
I think we have a good plan, and I misspoke earlier. I think I misconfused. Tom corrected me on his discussion with Chaz, and they were talking about extending this lane. I was thinking, sorry, extending this back this way. And then possibly if the green paint is an opportunity here, maybe that could be effective as well. So we'll look into it. I think we've got a decent plan to make this better. But again, I think as far as the bypass lane, I think that is the most effective to make this operate for everyone in the future. So,
if I just might add, you know, the point of the green paint is twofold. One is to guide the cyclists, but two, it's a visual warning to drivers that the cyclist's going to be potentially in this zone. And that is actually, in my view, more important than guiding the cyclist. They're both important, but it really helps driver awareness that there may be other users than are encased in a metal can.
Any additional comments or questions? All right, let's move on to sheet 13.
So again, here's the Carson Mall. We have another one of those flashing crossings there for safe crossing. So, no other comments from me on that, though.
Questions or comments on sheet 13? Okay, sheet 14.
So this is where you start to get a lot of those, more of the bulb out and parking pullouts there, some of the wider sidewalks that are on the east side of the street. Any comments?
Am I going to get my stained glass?
I do like that idea. We don't have it in this design, but it's definitely something to consider. You're talking about the beaded, yeah.
So what we're talking about is in the parking pockets using beaded glass or colored glass to delineate the parking stalls, because right now the parking pockets downtown are designed for two cars, but you see three parking in there because the paint fades or wears off very quickly. So with the glass, it's more permanent, although there could be a maintenance issue, I understand, with the snow plows.
Sorry. I think it's just anytime you have a specialized construction technique or something like that, I mean, the long-term maintenance is something that we want to make sure that we get right and look at. So I don't think we fully evaluated yet in time for this project, but it's something we can consider in the future.
Yeah, what I would ask you to consider is the maintenance issues versus when you drive downtown now and you see trucks with their tailgates sticking into the road because they're not using the parking stalls correctly. So I think that there's an issue there that we need to address. We either need to find a better way to paint the stalls, or we need to use an alternative material that is permanent, that delineates the stalls so that we can see where they are.
Noted. We will discuss.
Any other questions or comments on sheet 14? Sheet 15.
This is the very northern end of the project. And again, we lengthen that right, we essentially, there's a lengthened right turn for that, for Fifth Street to the east. And we talked about that last time we were here, that we were going to implement that in just because of the demand from Lompa that we anticipate the Lompa developments in the future. So just wanted to talk about that.
Questions or comments on, go ahead, Chance.
Tom and I talked about this, but I think you need transition striping for the bike lane across 6th Street.
where you take it out to the left of the right turn lane?
So right where my cursor is right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Any other questions or comments? All right.
Okay. Get into a little bit of construction. I think I've got about five or six more slides. I think we'll hopefully not too much longer. But essentially, you know, as I mentioned, with S&C being the CMAR, this is one of the advantages of this process is we can start talking about and getting creative and talking about traffic control right now. So I wanted to give you guys kind of an update of the direction we're headed at this point. For simplicity, I've kind of divided up this map into three construction zones. For the most part, this project, there's a lot of room on the street, so it's not a real difficult from a traffic control standpoint, except that it's a major street for us. But essentially, so the blue section there south of Fairview, we'll keep a minimum one lane of travel in each direction. So this is a minimum. Obviously, S&C's, you know, they're a good contractor. They're experienced in this. They'll try to open it up as much as they can, but definitely a minimum of one lane of travel in each direction plus a center turn lane through that southern section. And then the yellow section there is north of Stewart. That'll be a minimum one lane of travel in each direction. So pretty simple. They'll just, you know, start on one side of the road, build, and then flip it in over to the other side, move traffic over to the other side, and then build on the other. So pretty simple there. The roundabout, I'm going to have some more details. That's where it gets a little complex from a traffic control standpoint because there's a lot of grading associated with the roundabout. And so that's going to be a little tricky. Again, the value of the CMAR, I'll talk about the details in the next page, but I think we have a really good solution there. Business access at all times will be on this project, so I want to make sure that's clear. All times, at least one of the driveways will be open, and they'll try to keep all of them. I mean, obviously, if they're working on the driveway at that time, there might be some creative options there, but business access will be maintained. I wanted to point that out.
S&C is doing that construction on Virginia, aren't they?
They are, and that's a lot trickier than this, I can tell you that. So,
So but they have the experience in all of the traffic control and keeping the businesses open.
Exactly. And getting, I mean, a lot of that too, you need a contractor that can get creative too, because it doesn't, I mean, you guys know how it works. It doesn't always work as planned. And there's certain requests from some businesses, and we'll try to accommodate those as much as we can with this project, S&C. So roundabout construction closure. This is a unique, like I said, the grading here is pretty substantial because you're kind of building up that center of the roundabout. So it's much harder to kind of flip traffic to one side, build half of the street, half the roundabout, and then flip it over to the other side. If we did that, it'd be about 12 to 14 weeks in this area where they'd be working, and traffic would be changed. The detouring and what was open one week might be different the next week because they're going to be flipping all around. So we got creative with S&C. If we shut down, so the area in red, basically, if we can shut down that, we can get it to, I put 6 weeks on here, but if we do marathon shifts, we think we can get it down to 4 weeks. And essentially what this would do, all the businesses along this corridor have access from either Stewart or Curry. So we would work in there and build about 95% of the roundabout. If your traffic heading southbound into the roundabout, you could access all those businesses and go out on Curry or Stewart, but you wouldn't be able to go southbound through the roundabout for that 4 week period. We are going to keep a northbound. We thought it was very critical to keep a northbound lane open through this roundabout construction, access to the mall area, some of the state buildings there. So we're going to maintain that as much as we can through that 6 weeks. But again, the benefits of this are, and I think from experience downtown, a lot of the businesses there were just wanting us to get out of their way as quickly and fast as possible. So the benefits between a 14-week where we're in that area and flip-flopping and changing every week versus 6 weeks, get in there, get it done. Everybody still has access for businesses. That is the way we are going to go on this project. The other thing I wanted to point out there with the benefits is consistency is a really big deal for traffic control. When you're making plans and 1 week it's this way and the next week it's this way as far as detouring, a lot of people are just like, I'm so confused when I go down there. I don't even want to go into that area. So I think consistency with our traffic detours is very important with this project. On the next slide, I've got a picture, a slide there of how this will look as far as detouring. So the red area is kind of where that shutdown would happen. You can't see it very well, but there's that yellow, that's that northbound. So you could still go northbound and access Stewart during that 4 to 6 week period. And then the detours would be, we'd have two, which is nice, two good detour options. You'd be 5th to Roop to Fairview, which is in the blue. So if you wanted to get south, you'd go there. Or you have the option of going 5th to Curry to Rhodes down here. So I just wanted to mention the options and kind of how we've been approaching this project with SNC on that.
So with DMV and NDOT being right there, are you going to direct them down Oregon Street, you know, for the people going southbound?
Yeah, so they would have, is that, what is that right there?
That's that driveway.
And some so they would be able to, yeah, go out here, Oregon Street down to Roop, exactly. And I mean, you know, during the peak hour, it's going to be, but the thing is, if we allowed the one lane in each direction, it's still going to be, during that peak hour, it's going to be tough. So this way we get in, we get out, and open it back up with a new roundabout.
That's going to be a lot of traffic at 5 o'clock on Roop. A lot.
Yeah, and we thought, we agree it's going to be, for that period, it's going to be tough. But I think the fact that we have two pretty good detour options there, obviously, the people that want to get to the freeway out Fairview, they're going to be Roop. But there's also Solomon if they want to head further to the east. So there's some other options there as well.
I'm just...
Yeah, no, I mean...
that we just tell the public more options than Roop because Roop is going to be overwhelmed at that hour. And yes, so go ahead and detour, sign them down to Solomon is what I'm saying.
Have the options.
Give them the
yeah,
option
yeah.
to slide further down because that's going to be a huge impact on Roop. And everybody's going to take the shortest, what they believe is the shortest. But Solomon will be faster maybe. And the school's not in at 5, so that helps. I'm just saying the 5
and
o'clock
I,
traffic.
I do want to point out, no, I think those are all really good points and communication is going to be key on this. SNC knows that. We know that. We're planning as we get closer, so probably November timeframe. Staff is going to be heading out to all the state facilities, NDOT, handing out informational flyers, talking to people there, make sure the word's out on the detour options, as well as those businesses along the corridor. We're going to be talking to them as far as these detour options. So that is going to be an important component that we're going to do early on. Before, obviously, we get into construction. So I did want to point that out.
Another idea on that is maybe talking to DMV and having them put something on their website.
Yeah, that's a – yeah, yeah, excellent idea.
I was just going to – at one time I heard that we were going to connect Stewart to Roop. I guess that disappeared, but That would have been a nice jump straight across the...
That's a federal issue, so I think Senator...
No, that got
Senator
in
Amity.
Yeah.
Well, I just gave him a promotion.
Senator? Yeah.
Senator Amity, yeah. Congressman Amity is, I think, still working on that, correct? He's trying to get that included in the lands bill.
Really?
I think you're confusing that no. with westbound Stewart to Curry.
Oh, okay.
Eastbound... connection to Roop. I don't know if Lucia or Dirk have any information on that. I don't think that's in the works, but they are, yeah, there's obviously the city for 20 plus years is, and the plan for this roundabout is to ultimately have that fourth leg connection to Curry. There's no connections between 10th and Rhodes to Curry Street on that. So ultimately that's the plan and we're hoping we're making progress there, but nothing to the east.
Okay, and then the comment is that people are going to do what I do. You cut through those businesses to get from Carson over to, you can cut through Arby's or cut through the gas station or there's all those bypasses through there. Maybe they'll get more business to get to their business from both sides. I I just appreciate all the work you, time you guys put into this project. You do a good job and very responsive, and it's not an easy thing to do. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that. Yeah, it's a big, big challenging project for sure, and I appreciate that comment. All right, so schedule moving forward, September, October, final design is the plan. We are beyond just the outreach to those the state buildings and the businesses that I mentioned to talk about the closure and detour for the roundabout. We are planning, and we've done this on the downtown projects, a public pre-construction meeting happening in November, December, and we'll be talking about even more details on the construction and give an opportunity to people to come out in an open forum, ask questions, sit down with the contractor and staff if they want to ask specifics about their site. So we are planning that. No date's been set, but we're looking at that November, December timeframe. Board of Supervisors, we would go tomorrow for the 90% update to them. And then construction, same plan. The plans have an executed construction contract by in December, and then start mobilizing towards the end of December, construction starting, I think, the first or second week in January, heavy construction, and then about a 9 to 12-month construction duration, so nothing's changed there. As always, CarsonProud.com is a great resource for anybody that's interested on information on the project, including kind of the evolution of design. We've kept it pretty current. Even an update a couple weeks ago, so please check that out. I did want to show this roundabout video.
Is that the one that was sent out to us?
Yeah, it's been the roundabout
Educational
video. Yeah, so it went out June 21st, it looks like. We think it was pretty well done and hopefully reached a lot of people. We're encouraging people, obviously, to share. I know it's been shared on social media quite a bit of places, even with our partners at FHWA and NDOT have shared it. So I want to play it for you all.
Watch the cars cross the lanes, though.
Check that out.
Current roundabouts in Carson City are only single-lane roundabouts, whereas the design for the South Carson Street and Stewart Street intersection is a multi-lane roundabout. This roundabout is intended to reduce traffic delays and, most importantly, improve traffic safety. So, how do you use a multi-lane roundabout? Here's how. When entering a roundabout, be sure to pay close attention to the signage. Know which lane to use before entering. You must yield to traffic before entering. Look to your left. If there's traffic clearance, proceed to go through. With multi-lane roundabouts, drivers must yield to both lanes. If you are going to turn left or make a U-turn, stay in the left lane. If you are planning to make a right turn, stay in the right lane. Most importantly, stay in your lane. Always yield to pedestrians on both the entrance and exit approach. If an emergency vehicle is entering a roundabout, exit at your destination and pull over immediately. Never stop or pull over in the roundabout.
So that's available on the website, not on social media. So again, please share with your contacts and the public out there. We want to obviously spread the word on that. And we appreciate your guys' comments on the importance of trying to get these educational videos out. So we appreciate the feedback there. Almost done. Just wanted to talk text, as you all know, but I want to talk about it every time I can. Text subscription service. If you text Carson Proud to 31996, it signs you up for mobile messaging. So, for example, when we posted that roundabout video, you would have gotten a text message saying there was an update or a roundabout video. So it's really nice to have, and it'll be really nice to have in, during the construction time as well. Social media, we're putting out updates there. Tom Grundy, all the tough questions, send to Tom. The easy ones I'll take. But here's his, there's his information there, his email and phone number. So with that, we will open it up to comments.
Any comments or questions from the commissioners?
No, I take back my comment. I swore I saw one that showed the cards, every one of them crossing over into the other lane, but that was a different one than this one. So that this was much
I'm glad it wasn't our video.
All right, so I'll open this up to public comment. Donna? You know the drill. Please state your name for the record and...
Hi, Donna Inverson with Muscle Powered and a pedestrian and a shaky bicyclist. I want to make one comment before I start is the video's nice. I haven't seen that one, but I'd like to see one that also showed bicyclists going through there. It would really help to see that. I want to thank you. You have been very forward-thinking and working with us regarding pedestrians and bicyclists. And I want to thank the commission. You've been very active with bicyclists and pedestrian community. Do want to say I've kind of upgraded my comments regarding that right turn lane and the roundabout. I've stood as a pedestrian right there with the one we have now. As a pedestrian trying to cross that thing, and it's brutal trying to get across that thing. I know you say it's a sharper turn, it's going to be a sharper turn, a little bit slower. Anything you can do to slow it down even more. And I am concerned if you were able to bring that up. You've got two pedestrian crossings there. And I'm concerned because, drivers and bicyclists are now going to have to be aware of each other and making sure they're in the right lane. There's a lot going on as they come into that. And now they've got to be aware of two pedestrian crossings and a turn. That's a lot to think about all at once. And a lot of tourists are going to be going through there. You know, locals are going to become familiar with it, but tourists are not going to be. And I'm concerned that they're not going to be able to see those two pedestrian crossings. And anything you can do to slow down that traffic, because going more than 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour is too fast to make that turn and have pedestrian crossings there with families. The multi-use path is going to attract a whole lot more pedestrian and bicycle traffic through that than has been going through there now. But I've, like I say, I've stood there, I've crossed there myself, I've seen people standing there and crossing there. You're standing there waiting as cars are going whipping through, you're trying to find that moment to whip across there. And the other thing I wanted to say, I'm part of a group that has been working very hard to create the historic Virginia and Truckee Trail, which is going to be a 60-mile rail trail going from Minden to Reno. And it's going to go right through there, which is going to attract a whole lot more of tourist, bicycle, and pedestrian traffic. And think about it, that's going to be a lot of tourists trying to get from the state and Capitol Museums right through that intersection to get to the Railroad Museum and the Stuart Indian Museums. And one of the things we're going to be doing, one of our first goals is to build the bridge over the Carson River right down to Douglas County, which is going to increase that pedestrian, mostly bicycle traffic, but even pedestrian hiking traffic right through that. So it's going to increase a lot more tourist traffic, people that aren't familiar with that. And so, like I say, anything you can do to slow down that motorist traffic through there is going to be vitally important. Not just going northbound, but the southbound. They've got to cross that, too, to get to the multi-use path. So that's but the video with showing the bicyclists getting through there would be really nice to see.
Thank you, Donna. Any additional public comment? Let's come on up.
Lewis, I'm just a resident of Carson City, so I just wanted to give you some encouragement. I think that I followed the discussion about the roundabout. I think that's clearly one of the most complicated parts of this. But as I was following the discussion, it reminded me of a pretty similar situation actually in San Francisco, that there's basically a highway off-ramp and a major bicycle commute route. And that's, in a way, even though physically it's different, that's kind of what you potentially have is bicycle and recreational commuters coming into the downtown, crossing against people coming auto at high speeds. And so you've got a conflict there. So I think you're on the right track. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but the discussion about the green striping and the transition, an earlier transition for the bicycles seems to be on the right track. So just a little encouragement for you all there.
Thank you, Lewis. Additional public comment? Going once, going twice. Come on up. Have a seat. Identify yourself for the record.
Dan Lett.
Push the button, Dan, so that the light's green. Oh. Thanks.
The two concerns I have, certainly the roundabout. I drive that Veterans and Geiger Grade roundabout. My son lives in that neighborhood, so I don't know how you can make that safe for bike riders. And I, the board members, I know that they have some trepidations regarding it. I don't know what else you can do, but I've lived here long enough and read the paper with all the bike problems they've had in Reno and the bike accidents. And is this going to be our create really a big problem? And if there's any way, you guys are the experts. I'm not saying you're wrong, but there's some other solutions for safety purposes. To me, the safety should be the number one criteria. That be looked at. The other issue is, it's always bothered me, the frontage road that basically exists from Colorado to Moses Street. I wish that you would include that and eliminate that frontage road. It's all part of the right-of-way. It just as many of the properties on the west side of the road, they lease it or use that land for their parking and so forth. It's just more roadway we have to maintain at the cost of maintaining these roads over the years. And it gives, I think it gives you greater opportunity to maybe make some special stops and integrate it with those buildings. And by doing it also, the uniformity of South Carson Street, I think, would look a whole lot better. But now that you're 90%, but I'm one of these people that think, you know, I know it's 90%. We're going to have to do it sometime in the future, most likely. Might as well do it now.
Thank you, Dan. Just to address your comments on the frontage road, that is an issue that we've looked at, and there's a couple of issues there. One is cost. Secondly, it's the legal title to all the separate parcels. We have to look at each parcel in that right-of-way and how we acquired title to it before we can decide what we're going to do with all that right-of-way, and the timing doesn't work for the South Carson Street project. So there's nothing that we could do with that area prior to this project. It's going to take us a longer period of time to be able to determine what we can do and whether we can lease or sell any of those properties.
See, I always understood that that frontage road was part of the NDOT right-of-way. And I can't, I'm dating myself now, but and I can't remember why they created that in the first place. But that's why I say that the right-of-way on the west side extends into a number of those properties, driveways, their parking areas, and so forth. Some of them lease them, and some of them just use that land from the highway department. But you're going to know more about this than I do at this point, that if there are separate deeds for that property, it was my understanding that the highway department own that land. They all have, rights to ingress and egress off of the highway there. But you probably looked into a lot more than I have.
I can call you and we can discuss this offline, Dan.
Okay.
But there, anyway, we can talk offline, so okay. I'll catch you up on it.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you.
I got your number. Any additional public comment? Last chance on this item? All right, then I'll bring this item back to the board and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. If I can find. So I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors acceptance of the 90% design of the South Carson Street Complete Streets project on the understanding that staff is going to take into account the comments here and the comments they've received from other the public and have a serious look at the roundabout and the other issues that have been brought up.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Can we second the kind of a general statement, I guess? Yeah, that's a little rough for
someone
what I'm
going to say. So I'll discussion.
Second it.
We have a second for discussion, so discussion.
Yeah, that's before I second. I guess that's more of a discussion. As long as everybody's clear what all that means and their responsibility, it doesn't necessitate any changes. Just ask for review, I guess. That's what we're, is that more what you mean? There's nothing. There's no expectation. There's just a hope.
I do have an expectation. But there were so many comments, many of which staff have agreed to, you know, do in terms of signing and striping and things like that, and some which obviously their opinion is that it's better off the way it is. So I don't know how to list all those. It's my dilemma.
So I think your motion is too broad in the sense it almost directed them to take all of our comments and they have to do something with them. So is it that you want them to review tonight's discussion and say yes or no to them and that the staff has the right to say yes or no to them? And then at the Board of Supervisors level, they would say here was comment number one from RTC. We considered it. Implemented it or didn't implement it. Number two, yes, no. Is that what you're anticipating, that they would bring it back to the Board of Supervisors level, kind of like they did on tomorrow. A slide? I know, but that's why we're on discussion. But hey. I'm letting you know that feasibility of what you're talking about is not going to happen between today and tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the problem. So
right.
If anyone has a suggestion how to
that was my question.
Handle that, I'm willing to.
So I would ask of staff Based on the motion that has been made, do you have clear direction, or would you like a motion that is more defined that gives you better direction?
I believe we have clear direction of the areas definitely that we need to evaluate further. Again, and I think Chaz said, or sorry, Chair, Commissioner McCurry said, is that some of these we do feel like the design that you see today is the best design. So I can't promise, you know, I'm not going to change stuff that necessarily staff disagrees with from an engineering standpoint. But some of these things, I think that the feedback we got today, there's some areas that we definitely need to look at further and find a solution for. And then there's some areas that I think are pretty simple things that we can do and tweak in the design and implement and make you all happy with that. So I believe that we have clear direction based off the feedback that we've received from you today.
Wow. I'm surprised. But how are you going to present that then at the board tomorrow? I guess I'm missing how the board's going to give you a go at, if this board's giving you a go-ahead, tomorrow's board, I'm assuming you want to go ahead so that you can stay on schedule. Exactly how will we know what we're voting on if we don't see another plan doesn't come back to us? I mean, the objective is for you to move forward.
Tomorrow's meeting. We have, like I said, a month and a half until final design that we can incorporate these changes, and I'm confident that we've received direction from you that we can make those changes happen if it makes sense from an engineering standards point of view. Again, I don't think we can commit to everything if we truly feel that the design is optimal the way it is today. But we do have a month and a half where we would come back at a later date. I mean, obviously to get the contract executed at the board, I mean, that they're going to see it again. But I think we have clear direction, not by tomorrow to make these changes, but over the next month and a half, 2 months before we have an executed contract.
So then the board tomorrow could say, we want you to do the same thing that RTC recommended. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm procedurally trying to walk through a process because I don't know tomorrow what I could be voting on if I don't know where you're going with the comments from tonight, if it's a yes or a no. So I'm just going to potentially say I approve the 90% and want you to continue to consider the RTC thoughts.
I guess
we're backed up with one another. The meetings are, like you said, and I guess, no time between the two.
Move forward, the motions the board could be, I mean, I don't want to make,
no,
that's,
I,
yeah,
I'm
but
I'm
just thinking.
Procedurally, I don't want this board to tie up tomorrow's board and tie your time
to
stay on track.
Yeah, to, review and incorporate if necessary, the comments from RTC as you advance from 90 to the final design.
I don't think that we can do that because we have no guarantee that all members of the board have even seen this discussion tonight, and in fact, they probably haven't. So I think that the board of supervisors needs to make comments based on their review of the 90% plans, and then you'll have to accumulate any suggested recommendations from the different groups that you're in front of, RAC, RTC, and the board of supervisors, and then The issue that I think Lori's getting at is that it's really too late for us to comment on 100% design when it comes back to us. Like, it's the same conversation that we've had tonight at 90% design. It's really getting too late in the game to make a lot of significant changes. So I guess maybe there's not a significant comfort level in understanding where we're at in the design and what changes are being made. And I don't know that I have an answer for a better way to do this other than you have direction from this commission. You'll get direction tomorrow from the Board of Supervisors. And have you already been in front of BRAC?
Yes, on August 5th.
Okay, so you have direction from them as well.
Yes.
Did they have comments or did they just approve it?
RTC is the technical body that provides. RAC is more of an update because they are giving us funds to use on the project. You all at RTC are the technical, I guess, advisors is how I term it on this project.
So they didn't have any changes?
Oh, sorry. to answer that question, no. I mean, I don't believe there was any changes that they offered.
Okay. So you would have the discussion from tonight and potentially discussion from tomorrow, and you would look at, analyze all of those recommendations and then either incorporate them or not incorporate them into the 100% design, which we will see when it comes to contract time.
RTC will not see it. Board of Supervisors would see the contract execution.
Okay.
I just want to be clear so everyone here knows process-wise you're not getting it back. So you're not going to know whether you're going to know because we're going to go to contract, but there's no opportunity to see what was or was not implemented. And so I think I was more comfortable tonight considering the higher priorities and saying things like, we would like you to incorporate green paint because we think that's a safety issue. And I think all of us, maybe the points that we all could agree on and say we'd like to see in the plan, we'd like you to look at appropriate signage and safety concerns for the bike lanes, which then could be translated to tomorrow because that's a very specific recommendation and change versus a broad one of, well, look at everything we talked about and put in what you can. That's all I am concerned about, is what direction is this commission actually giving you? So one of them was do any, right, green paint to be safe.
I think
I'd rather feel comfortable telling the other board members. Brad and I are fortunate, right, because we can probably carry a lot of the messages forward tomorrow. But I don't think it's fair to the other three members of the board not to have the recommendations or the issues. And so I really wanted to pare down more for tomorrow's presentation. There's going to be green paint and slowing down the roundabout to the best of the ability. That was the biggest crux of the discussion, right? Some of the other was cosmetic to making the bikes as safe as possible. Is that really the crux of everything?
Darren, you want to jump in there? Yeah.
If I may, Darren Schultz, Public Works. Why don't we, if you looked at the presentation tonight at 60% to 90%, and as we went through the presentation, we took all the comments that we got at 60%, and we either thumbs up or we thumbs down, right? So I think we could follow that same model moving forward. So we'll take the comments from RAC independently. We'll take the comments from RTC independently. And we'll take the comments from the Board of Supervisors independently. Put all those comments together. And then when we come back, we will go through each one of those comments again at the 100% and let you know thumbs up or thumbs down. And if you... Right. And then
how about as an alternative that we put this back on the agenda, say, a month from now, just as a presentation, so that we can go through the comments and get an update on what is going to be incorporated and what is not going to be incorporated? Would that be okay with everybody?
Is that enough time, Dan? Otherwise, we'd have 2 months.
So I think definitely by then we can tell you what is going to be incorporated, like the thumbs up, thumbs down that Darren suggested. As far as like showing you the final design, that might be a little more of a challenge, but I think definitely we can say we looked into it, we did it, we're incorporating it, or we decided not to do it.
Yeah, I would like to see it come back, whether it's 95% or whatever you call it at that point. I would be okay with that, I guess. Yeah.
My only comment is it would just be a presentation slide of what they did or didn't take, because this board will get no further action.
That's correct.
I just want to be very transparent with everyone, so I'm okay with that.
Mark?
I like the simplicity of the Romans. You'd see they're up or down, so I...
Yeah. I'm totally comfortable with that rather than a lot of discussion and disagreement. Yes. And just come up and down and it's informational.
So can the motion maker amend his motion to include that we'll come back at next month's meeting with a presentation item for an update?
I'll amend the motion to include what Chairman Ronkowski just said.
Does the seconder continue their second?
Yes.
Staff clear on direction?
Yes. The only question I have, so tomorrow's agenda item at the Board of Supervisors is direction to advance from 90 to final. That would still, I believe, the agenda item with coming back here for a 95% update.
I think that they're independent jurisdictions, and you come back here with an update for us with the comments that you get from all three, RAC,
yeah. Yeah.
RTC, and the board. But there's nothing that you can do between today and tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
So are we good on direction?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Lucian, wake up. You good?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so we have an amended motion and continued second on the table. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. All right, we have a decision. We have approval. It's unanimous. So we're now moving on to item 6D. For possible action, discussion and possible action regarding amendment number 2 to renew contract number 1516-129, public transportation operating services with MV Transportation, Inc. for an annual amount of $844,898 through September 30, 2020. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now for the fun stuff, huh? So the contract with MV Transportation was executed in July of 2016 with the RTC approving the contract for a 3-year term, which goes through September 30th, 2019. Within that contract, there were 3 single-year option years to be having the cost of those option years negotiated at the time that they were up for potential renewal. On December of 2017, those that were on this commission may recall we executed Amendment Number 1, which at the time was primarily aimed at increasing the base wage for the drivers by $2. And this was to maintain our regional competitiveness of our drivers. And at the time, it brought us up from, to staff's knowledge, the bottom in the region up to, I think, the second from the bottom in the region. Tonight is Amendment Number 2 for your consideration. It is execution of that option year. I did enter into discussions for the option year with our new transit coordinator as well as with Christy Park, who's the general manager of our MV operation here. She's here tonight in case you have questions for MV. The information that we received, the cost proposal, is provided in the packet as part of the contract amendment. Shown in the financial information section is the cost per revenue hour from our contract year. The amendment number 1 from December of 2017, it increased the cost per revenue hour for the second half of year 2 as well as year 3. And so that increase was $2, of which, if you recall at the time, it was half covered by MV and half covered by RTC Jack. So you'll see in the packet under 1920 in that table on packet page number 128, the jump from $31.88 per revenue hour up to $35.81 per revenue hour. This is part of the proposal under consideration tonight. That's an increase of approximately $4. So in general, we can expect, and we've seen during over the contract period, a general increase in cost of operation each year. We can expect that to be about 3%. That said, this jump in increase, I'm told from MV, is a general increase in the cost of doing business, typically what we would expect each year. But what the city's also getting as part of this increase is $1 per hour for each of our 2 dispatchers, $1 per hour for our drivers and $1 per hour for the operations manager who manages the dispatch of the vehicles. And so that wage increase brings us up again. So in terms of the driver wage, the base wage went from $10 per hour before amendment number one. We increased it $2, so it was up to $12 per hour as of December of 2017. And this approval of this option year would bring that base wage for the drivers up to $13 an hour. I'm told we would still be at the bottom regionally. I was told the next highest one is $14 an hour. I believe the Blue Go up in Tahoe just increased to $14, which matches the TART up on the North Shore in Tahoe and Washoe RTC. So, you know, it makes us more competitive. It is a fairly substantial jump compared to the $31.88. However, it will help retain those drivers. We will still retain that dollar per hour contribution from MV that was agreed upon in Amendment 1. Nothing else as part of the agreement, including conditions, requirements, or restrictions, is proposed to be amended as part of this action tonight. And potentially we would come back to exercise the second option year a year from now should operations continue to go smoothly. So with that, I didn't have a lot of talking points, but I'm happy to answer any questions. And again, the transit coordinator and the general manager for MV is here to answer questions as well. Thank you.
So, Lucia, can you tell us what a $53,000 annual increase in operating cost, what's the long-term impact on the JAC system? Like, do you see that affecting service at some point in the future, especially if we are looking at continually increasing the wage base like we've been faced with?
It is certainly a consideration. I mean, costs to operate transit continue to go up across Northern Nevada. We're not the only ones with this problem. I will tell you that a portion of our FTA funds that we do receive, we are eligible for the 80-20 match. So RTC puts up 20% of those costs. However, there's a ceiling on the portion of your funds where you can get that good match rate. And every year we use all of our funds that were eligible for that rate. So this increase, you can assume it's the 50-50 match, which is the lower match rate. So the true cost to Carson City is going to be about half that. And then if you talk about year over year increasing by the 3%, it is a consideration. And at some point, that's a discussion that we should continue to have. I will say I excluded it from my original talking points, but this was anticipated and was budgeted for fiscal year 20 in the transit fund. For the last several years, the general fund contribution to transit was stable at $400,000 a year, and that was increased to approximately $466,000 this year. So there is, I say, ample budget. It was planned to cover this action this evening. I think that answered your question.
Yes, it does. Any additional questions, comments, Mark?
I only had a question about a way of doing business and having just these yearly renewals instead of doing another three-year contract or something, so that puts you both on better ground for the next few years rather than figure you got to renegotiate this next year and then renegotiate again the next year instead of having a long-term contract. So is that normal business with this type of service, or is there a chance to maybe review that next year?
That's a great question. I think, right, you know, my recommendation at this point is we continue on the one-year renewal cycle, particularly in light of the ongoing transit plan. Should operations change, it would be in our best interest to rescope and potentially go out for RFP again to see which operators could meet our needs. But at this point, you know, things are working well with MV. Since Christy Park came onto the team a few months ago, communication has really improved, and so I was comfortable executing the one-year option at this time.
Thumbs up.
Other questions or comments? Okay. All right, public comment on this item. Any member of the public that has comment, come on up and identify yourself for the record.
Hello. how to use light. Oh, there. Christy Park, GM of Jack MV. I wanted to just say thank you for all of the time that we have had with MV and Carson City, and we look forward to continuing the relationship and continuing to serve the passengers of Carson City. I've enjoyed getting to know them. I've enjoyed getting to know the drivers, and I thank you for the possibility of being able to give drivers a pay increase, because that's what gives me the ability to keep happy drivers, which gives me happy passengers. So, thank you.
Thank you, Christy. Any additional public comment on this item? If not, I'll bring it back to the commission and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move to approve Amendment 2 to Contract 1516-129 as proposed.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. That is approved unanimously. Mr. Kimbrough, we are now on item 6E, and I think that you have a recusal to put into the record on this one.
Yes, actually, I worked for Alta, and I actually proposed this as a relationship for this contract to Alta, so I figured I'd best not vote on this. And do I need to dismiss myself from this seat to it out there, or are we all right here?
As far as whether you need to leave your seat, no, you can certainly stay right there. Given your conflict and disclosed conflict, the ethics rules require that you can't vote, and that'll reduce the quorum for this particular item.
Thank you, Todd. All right, so item 6E. For possible action, discussion and possible action regarding contract number 1819-181, 2019 Bicycle and Pedestrian School Safety Review Studies between Carson City and Headway Transportation for total not to exceed amount of $149,860 to be funded from the RTC Safe Routes to Schools program. Usha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start by saying that RTC to date hasn't had much opportunity to take action on Safe Routes to School activities. However, it is within the scope of the authority of RTC, and so I'm excited to bring this to you tonight. The dollar amount for this project is quite high compared to planning activities that you typically see. And I will say that the multi-benefits we expect to result from the project are commensurate with that high dollar amount. I'll give you a little bit of background. The city issued a request for qualifications back in February of this year to identify a contractor to do this project, which involves school safety review studies at each of the 8 elementary and middle schools across Carson City. In response to the RFQ, we did receive 4 proposals. Staff evaluated the proposals and ranked them using the evaluation criteria in the RFQ. Headway Transportation with subconsultants Alta Planning and Angst Imaging were determined to be the most qualified consultant firm. They were let know that they were selected, and staff entered into cost negotiations for them. It was very quickly determined that staff's aspirations for the project far exceeded our available budget to conduct the studies. Budget for the Safe Routes to School grant has exceeded our ability to spend it. And this is in part due to recurring vacancies of the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator, as well as we have not filled all the part-time Safe Routes to School champions positions. We just haven't had the need to date. So those cost savings have allowed a funding shift. We did receive approval from NDOT for that funding shift, and that approval letter is provided in the packet, Exhibit 1. Buried in that Exhibit 1 is all the background, including my letter to NDOT requesting the shift, the justification for the shift, and the job description for the bicycle pedestrian coordinator, et cetera. So that's all in there, and I'm happy to answer questions about that as well. The Safe Routes to School program is reimbursable at a rate of 95%. For this grant, there's a 5% in-kind match requirement. This is generally covered by administrative time to process the reimbursement requests, as well as the cost of the office, the air conditioning, the lights, et cetera, for the Safe Rest of School coordinator. And we have exceeded our in-kind match, so the action tonight, it's covered by the existing grant. Details about the scope of the project are provided most clearly starting on packet page number 185. So there is a substantial data collection component. There are assessment studies for each of the 8 schools in Carson City. There's a substantial digitization and GIS mapping piece of the results of the analysis. And then there's prioritized implementation reports. The benefits of all this are to the Carson City School District, are to the Nevada Safe Routes to School program administered by Nevada DOT, as well as to RTC. This program has shifted from the health department back in 2017, where the focus was on healthy kids, getting kids to school in a healthy and active manner. And now it's in Public Works, where we build infrastructure, right? We build safe routes to school. So the outcome of this project will be a set of reports that prioritizes those necessary infrastructure improvements and gives us a long-term plan that can be used to go out and seek competitive grant funding to fund these improvements. It contributes to our ADA transition plan. It contributes to our active transportation component of CAMPO's regional transportation plan, and I'm really excited about this. So that said, if approved tonight, the project is expected to start right away and should be done by next spring. A representative from Headway Transportation is here, and he can answer questions if you have any, and I am available to answer questions as well. Thank you.
Questions from the commissioners?
Yes. Let me start by saying I think this is an excellent thing to do, and I really support that. And given the scope, I think the price is reasonable. I did notice, though, in the information packet that was provided here, there was a proposal, and I know it's not an agenda item here, and we're not voting on that here, but it is going to the Board of Supervisors tomorrow, to change the bike and pedestrian coordinator position to a transportation planner slash analyst, excuse me, position. And what the concern I have about that is when I read the description for the reclassified position, it does not mention bicycles or pedestrians at all. It's just a transportation planner duties. And so on the face of it, that appears that we're...
Sorry. Commissioner McGuire.
Yes, sir.
I have to jump in at this point and just let you and Chairman Bykowski know that this is a little bit off topic. The question of whether or not to reclassify the position and change the name is something for the Board of Supervisors tomorrow, and it's not really within the scope of this agenda item or the RTC's powers today. So it's a little bit off topic.
So you're telling me I need to show up tomorrow, huh? Okay.
Tomorrow's agenda item with the Board of Supervisors would be the correct time and location to raise your concerns about that.
That said, if I may, I will add that the change in job description, you know, is included to be fully transparent. The assignment of that employee will not change as a result of the title change. That employee will be 100% grant funded by the Safe Routes to School grant, will continue to manage all Safe Routes activities, and will be the manager of this project once they're brought on. So that is the intent.
Okay. Any additional comments or questions on the contract? Seeing none, I'll open this up to public comment. Is there any public comment on this item? I see no public comment, so I will bring this item back to the commission and entertain a motion.
I move to award the contract as presented.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. So the vote is 4-0 with one abstention. All right. We are now on item 7, Internal Communications and Administrative Matters, non-action items. 7A, Transportation Manager's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As part of the budgeting for fiscal year 20, you are, I believe, all aware that we received approval to bring on a transportation traffic engineer. Interviews have been conducted and an applicant has been selected. We have to get that applicant on board with the team in the next couple of weeks, so you should start seeing a new face here at the RTC meetings, if not in September, certainly in November, October. That is my sole update for this evening.
Any questions on that? All right, let's move on to 7B, Street Operations Activity Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, comments short this evening. On item 7B, just a reminder, we have a delay, so the information provided tonight is for June. There were no activities out of the typical street operations. We do summer activities. You'll see pavement markings, concrete flat work, those types of things. Happy to answer any questions, and our streets ops manager, Rick Cooley, was here earlier, but he is getting more engaged in RTC, and he's very supportive of all these discussions as well. Thank you.
Any questions on the Street Operations Activity Report? All right, moving on to 7C, Project Status Report.
Chair, I'll take this one tonight. I think we should have a break. So I'll go through the projects. Might skip ones that we discussed heavily tonight, but if you want to stop me, feel free. First project is South Carson, so we'll move on from that one to the freeway multi-use path to Colorado Street. We got comments back from NDOT on our 90% plans. We are addressing those, and we are looking forward to a notice to proceed in August or September. Moving on to the next project, which is Fairview Drive reconstruction project. We have submitted 100% plans to NDOT, which was exciting. Again, we also anticipate a notice to proceed in August or September, which is right when the NDOT closes for the federal fiscal year, which begins October 1st. Yeah.
This one's planning for construction in September of 2020. Is this going to interfere with the plan we saw earlier for people to use route to Fairview?
We are coordinating these two projects very carefully, and that's why this one's actually going to go out at a similar time with at South Carson so that we can ensure that coordination.
Okay.
Good question.
Yikes.
Kings Canyon Road, Kings Canyon Trailhead Improvement and Roadway Reconstruction, nothing new to report, 75% plan still anticipated for December. Stewart Street Pedestrian Signal Project, as we noted last month, it is completed except for power. I've heard rumors that we should be expecting power this week, but I have not confirmed that yet. Moving on to the CDBG College Parkway Improvement Project, we discussed that, so unless there's any questions, I'm going to move on. Freeway multi-use path to the Edmund Sports Complex. We have executed a signed agreement with NDOT, and we are awaiting a notice to proceed, and this will allow us to kick off design on that project. Airport Road Sewer Replacement Project. We have got comments on our 90% design plans that were submitted in July. Again, we are anticipating a notice to proceed in late August or early September. Fiscal year 2019 District 1 Pavement Preservation Projects. Construction has begun. This includes a number of projects, but we are anticipating a completion date by about August 30th.
I have a question on that one on College Parkway. How long before they get a street sweeper out there?
I appreciate you asking that question. We discussed it earlier this afternoon, and I'm told the street sweeper went out today.
Okay.
So we're addressing those safety concerns immediately.
It wasn't out there as of 2 o'clock this afternoon. Okay. Sure. They waited for me to drive over the road with all the loose gravel. Okay.
Next project is the fiscal year 2019 District 1 Gonai Road Reconstruction Project. This one, I'm happy to report, is completed. Moving on to fiscal year 2019 District 1 Street Lighting. This is where we were working with Energy Energy to add streetlights. The project is planned to post for bids in August. The next one is the fiscal year 2019 District 1 Pavement Preservation Projects, which we are moving forward with despite the delay in the CDBG project. And so this one will be completed by August 30th. Clearview Drive Micro Servicing Project. Again, this one has begun as part of a group of surface seals, and this one will be completed on August 30th. Group Street Rehabilitation Project. This is a project that's being funded with the VNT funds. Soil testing has been completed. We'll be evaluating that internally. We are moving on to the review of right-of-way to see what kind of design constraints we might have. That concludes my comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on the project status report? All right, moving on to 7D, future agenda items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned earlier this evening, staff are meeting with our Citizens Advisory Group Traffic on August 26th, which is a Monday, from 4 to 6 p.m. here in the Community Center Sierra Room. All of the public and anyone that's interested is invited to attend. At that meeting, we'll be discussing the Performance District 2 projects under consideration, and then we will bring those projects and any comments or feedback we receive back here to RTC in September. We will also bring back an informational item regarding comments we receive from RAC, RTC, and the Board of Supervisors on the South Carson 90% design. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions on future agenda items or additional future agenda items for members of the commission? Okay. Agenda item 8, board comments. Are there any board comments from any of the commissioners? Mark, go ahead.
I have one that was actually tried to be addressed earlier, and it's just a comment and maybe discussion later in the future for an agenda item. But I was disappointed with the new job description for Safe Routes to School, so I would have liked to have had it come to this board, but it's a personnel matter. And why would it come to this board? I'm not sure we can address it tonight, but it's just a comment from me that it would have been nice for us to visit that, because I think it's kind of under our purview to deal with Safe Routes to School, but maybe it's not. That would be discussion for the Board of Supervisors. So it's just a comment, a little disappointed, and that. But there's an opportunity maybe tomorrow if I can work that out. Thank you.
Question for you. And I know I've talked about this before, I think. So, over there, you know, where Topsy hits center and racetrack, is that Douglas County or is that? The reason I ask is if you're coming toward, from the Lennar development toward 395, the sight distance on center is awful. And it's a two-way, right? So racetrack and Topsy have the stop signs and then and centers through. That I think surely be a four-way stop. So, I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up. What's that?
I was going to say, they already looked at it because I sent that in, I don't know, a while back and said it wasn't warranted.
It's Carson City Roadway south of that intersection for a stretch. North of the intersection on center is Douglas County's, and it's Douglas County's on Topsy as well. Racetrack going east of center is Carson City's. There's fences along the Lennar development. They meet Carson City code for site distance. And so that was permitted to meet Carson City Code. Staff have made the recommendation and discussed with Douglas County that a stop sign may be warranted there. However, the decision to put a four-way stop on that portion of Center is the decision of the Douglas County Board of County Commissioners.
Hmm. Well, all righty then.
Yeah, I've also had some comments from the public regarding that intersection, and you know, I had to tell them that you have to determine what portion of the intersection, you know, part of it's Carson City, part of it's Douglas County. It's a difficult area. Yeah, that's a tough one. Chaz.
Am I allowed to comment?
Well, it starts with, am I allowed to?
I will show up tomorrow at the Board of Supervisors, but my concern is that the new description does not mention anything about bikes and pets, and I think that is important that it do, because the perception is that we're not giving, you know, full weight that the bike and pet position deserves. So, that's my goal.
Thank you for your comments, and since there's two members of the board here, I'm sure that we can bring your comments up during the board meeting when we discuss this tomorrow. The next meeting is tentatively scheduled after the Campo meeting on Wednesday, September 11th, 2019, right here in this room. It's time for final public comment. And if we had any public left,
warm down.
They could comment at this time. So since there is no public here, I'm not thinking we're going to get any public comment. So we're now on agenda item 11 for adjournment. So moved. We are adjourned. Thank you.